It's on.
It's on.
Uh-oh, be careful.
You want me to behave?
Me? Oh, you. Oh, okay.
Good evening. Today is May the 13th, 2013. And the time is 6:10 p.m. This is a Policy Instruction Personnel Student Services Committee meeting. Carlos, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
And the first agenda item, please.
Item 2A, update on Transportation Department. Ms. Carrasco and Mr. Herrera.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, committee members, trustees, Ms. Brigham. I would like to, I went ahead and put this agenda item for some updates on our transportation department. First of all, I'd like to introduce Mr. Fred Herrera, who is our temporary administrator over transportation. And I believe during the course of since he started, he's already made some changes and put some things in places in place, and has also set forth some driver and monitor expectations. And so he is here today to give you an update of some of those changes and entertain any questions that you may have.
Go ahead. First of all, Mr. Herrera, welcome. I did not have the pleasure of heard so much about you, and I didn't have the pleasure of Martha.
It's probably all true.
Well, I don't know. I put a name to a face now, so yes. Thank you.
Ms. Gonzalez, members of the board, Ms. Brigham, Martha. First of all, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for the opportunity to serve Benedito Independent School District. And I'm starting this presentation out, a very brief presentation, because I was advised that there's going to be some questions. So I'd like to save the time for the questions that you may have. The first thing I'd like to do is to just go over some of the caveats that I was given as I was given this job. Right? The first one was that I met with Interim Superintendent Brigham, with Martha Carrasco, and I was hired only to focus on the transportation department. Period. It's transportation. The second thing is that the district limited me in a way that you limit the auditor, and it's basically my major role was to make recommendations. I make recommendations. That is my primary goal, make recommendations in the transportation department. Unlike an auditor, though, once those recommendations are approved, then I go ahead and move forward with the implementation. The two last ones are very important. In that I was looking at the position that I have, and the focus that I have on the department is that the driving force is on the restructuring the transportation model so that we improve operational efficiency and effectiveness by adding value. And the last one was that any improvements that result in dollar savings should equate to dollars being funneled into the budget for the instructional program. So everything that I've worked on in the few weeks that I've been here have been under those caveats. The first condition that we'd like to discuss with you is that as soon as I walked in, I was advised that the department lacked written guidelines, driver expectations. What are the drivers really expected to do on a regular basis? And getting there, I talked to many of the drivers, many of the monitors, and it appeared that most of their duties were predicated on practices. And unfortunately, those practices vary from driver to driver or monitor to monitor. And so what I worked closely with others. I developed a list of driver expectations. I'd like to sit here and take credit for that, but I really went out and did a lot of research. I copied the things that were good. I put them on a document. And once the document was complete, I went ahead and started a review process. And the order that I followed was that document was reviewed by my immediate supervisor, which is Ms. Matthews. She made a few changes, and that document went to Martha Carrasco for review and to Mike Gonzalez. Once they reviewed the document, they made quite a few changes to improve the document, and once that process was done, I put together a little peer group of drivers and monitors. So before they were issued or any training occurred, they were reviewed by this peer group. They also made some recommendations for improvement. Once this process was completed, we went and moved forward. Once I received approval, we went forward with the implementation with the drivers. To date, it's taken approximately 8 hours, several meetings with the drivers and with the monitors to go over the driver expectations, line item by line item, and they were given the opportunity to ask questions. These guidelines are an affidavit, and by that we mean that we didn't ask the drivers, we asked them for input, but the purpose of the document is to present them with guidelines of expectations in regards to performance. They were asked to sign the document. Their signature does not signify that they agree with the guidelines. It may, mainly for documentation purposes, it states that they understand what the guidelines are and they agree to abide by them. So these are in place, and I had talked to Martha that at the beginning, while these guidelines were being discussed, the big issue by the majority of the drivers was that eating and drinking time on the bus. They were very concerned about the fact of allowing students and or themselves to eat and drink on the bus. That was the huge issue that they had with the entire guidelines. For the most part, the majority of them also said for the record that the guidelines were something that they already knew should have been in place, were in place, but were not followed. Subsequent to the implementation of the guidelines, that focus shifted from the time on bus that they could eat and drink. It shifted to two categories. That had to deal with the 72-hour requirement that had been in place prior to my coming, and which happens to be a good idea. And the second one dealt with the emergency absences that employees were calling in.
What's the 72-hour?
The 72 hours, basically what that's intended to do, it's a guideline that's in the procedures, the expectation that asks the driver that if they know they're going to be absent for things such as a doctor's appointment, a funeral, a graduation, things that all of us know, usually we know at least 3 days ahead of time, we're asking the drivers to notify the supervisor and the dispatcher that they're going to be out. Now, to me, it sounds like a reasonable expectation from the employees, but I'm here to tell you that it's not. They don't like the idea. They're used to going ahead basically and advising the dispatcher or the supervisor with moments' notice that they're going to be out. Now, that's on both cases, whether it's a 72-hour or an emergency. They're in the habit of, for example, the dispatcher shows up for work at 6 o'clock. She's getting calls at 5 o'clock, an hour, sometimes 15 minutes before the bus has to take off by the driver saying, can't make my route today. Well, they can't make the route for several reasons, many of which we didn't document. There's no documentation in place that at this point in time for the previous period that shows how many absences were taken and the reasons for those absences. What these guidelines do, very simply, is that they provide the district with documentation of who's asking for the time and why. In accordance with board policy, the administration also is afforded the opportunity to go ahead and request for a doctor's notice in those cases where the employee appears to have abused that privilege. So at this point in time, the huge issue that has come to our attention deals with those two components of the guidelines. At this point, also, some of the drivers and some of the monitors have not signed their affidavits. We're getting ready to start calling those employees in. I'd like to say that it's because they forgot to sign them, possibly because they were busy doing other things, but it may come to a point in time where they refuse to sign, at which point in time I have no recourse but to go ahead and follow through with progressive discipline. The result with the guidelines is that there has been some improvement in driver behavior, but not what we expected. And this is my opinion. Most drivers appear to believe that they are a protected group. They are not subject to any rules. I've been told by some of the drivers, quite frankly, that their expectation is that they all realize that I'm here for the short term. And they're expecting that once that short term expires, that things are going to go back to the way they were. So the idea here is that with Martha Canasco's help, we did meet with the drivers, and we advised them that these guidelines are in place. They have them in writing, which is the first time that they claim it's been done, but that any subsequent changes to these guidelines would require approval not only from the supervisor, but up the chain of command to the executive director and to HR and to risk management, so that all parties that have to work with the guidelines are informed and agreeing to the changes to the expectations. So that's the first category of what we handle, the driver expectation, monitor expectation. Are there any questions that I could answer for you at this time?
Any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Medina.
On section 3 of that affidavit, route, keeps copy of route schedule and bus, student roster, seating chart, record showing time bus starts in the morning, time in leaves each point at which people are taken, on time of arrival at school, bus odometer reading at beginning of route where first pupil is picked up, where other stops are made, and reading upon arrival at school. Is this automated, or is this something they have to do manual?
Well, see, the idea here is that the department has moved forward with several recommendations, which I would like, with your permission, to cover at the end of the presentation. The idea here is that these very important processes are not in place.
Of course.
At this point in time, I'm embarrassed to tell the trustees that the department doesn't have any formal processes to capture important information such as gas, the use of gas. How much gas have you used? Don't know. How many miles by category have you driven? We don't know, because things are in flux from one day to the next. So the idea here is we work with these guidelines as we work with the rest of the presentation. It's all focused on things that other districts are doing, and some are doing quite well with the use of electronic tools.
Oh, so this would, the GPS would handle all this?
That's one of the components that I will be addressing.
That was it. Thank you.
Yes. With that question in mind, Madam Chair, could I ask
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, it would seem like an awful lot of work every time you let a kid out that you've got to write this stuff down. They're not being made to do that.
No, ma'am. The thing that basically covers is that the district is reimbursed for every mile driven under certain conditions. The district is not reimbursed on a dollar-by-dollar basis. So if your odometer readings are off, if you're not capturing the information correctly, you really don't know whether you're getting the maximum reimbursement from the Texas Education Agency. More importantly, those formulas have not been adjusted since 1985, so you're really not getting, you know, a fair amount for what you're spending. So if you're not capturing the right information, there's a high probability that you're not getting the money that you should be getting.
But just yes or no, we're not asking the bus driver every time you let a kid out.
No.
You've got to write it down.
No.
Okay. Thank you. That's
I think one of the biggest challenges is in managing the transportation department that the supervisors spend so much time tracking down incident reports. I saw somebody run a stop sign. I saw somebody speeding. I saw this. That between the GPS and the camera system, you could look it up like that. And then the supervisor would have the time to manage the department, because we spend so many times tracking down the he said, she said incidents. It's like the vast majority of the workload.
So Madam Chair, did we not just allocate money to get? No, we didn't.
No. What we did is maintenance vehicles first, and
we did the maintenance vehicles, and then
we're going out for bids, aren't we, for the GPS?
GPS for the school buses.
The board accepted the maintenance.
Yeah, but they didn't do together.
But we're going out for
bids. We didn't want to sole source. That's what we didn't want.
So it's not like we said no.
We'll budget for that in the coming year, Ms.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's not like we said no.
Okay, so no, it's going to get better.
We're not doing
yes.
it right, but
okay.
we're not doing it
right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you do your budget priorities,
you got to write those up.
Is it only GPS, Mr. Hidetta? Is it also another layer of software that you're talking about?
No, sir. There's several platforms that we're going to be proposing to the trustees for approval. And I didn't want to get out of order, but I'm going to do that. Let me just say this. It was at the end of the presentation. I never thought that I'd be here sitting before another board meeting presenting to the board. And I had talked to Martha jokingly saying that I'd do everything except that. I don't want to present the boards no more. But the bad part about it, I requested to come before you. And the reason that I requested to come before you was in the short period that I've been working for Canutillo, I'm very concerned about the operations of the transportation department. We have many employees that claim that they have the ear of administration, perhaps the trustees. And so it's unfortunate because what Ms. Matthews is talking about in regards to the documentation, in regards to the incident reports, in regards to the actual safety of the students, I'm here to plead before you, to plead, because of the fact that we have some situations that really, really put our students at risk. I myself have seen the safety risks on the bus. You have no discipline on the bus. You've got students that are jumping up on the bus while the bus is moving. You have incidents where the drivers are using their cell phone devices. That's contrary to state and to local law. And once you catch them, it's very hard to prove that they're doing it without the proper tools in place. But these tools serve a dual purpose. Not only do they protect the district from risk, but they also protect the employees from false allegations. So you're on the bus and you get accused of something, what a great way to be able to prove that you didn't do it, you've got a camera. And I know that the proposals that may have come forward may have been quite a bit of money. There's nothing that says that those proposals can't be toned down. We may not need four cameras in a bus, but guess what? Probably need one. You know, you don't need GPS on some of the vehicles, perhaps at the high school, but you do need them, you know, in the buses. And so I'm here because I know that I suspect that most of you hear from the drivers about what we're doing wrong. But the people that we're here for, that's why I'm here. The people that are not here to represent themselves, the people that we're here to really provide a service to, they can't defend themselves. And that's your students. That's our students. So as we look at the things that we're talking about today, I would urge all of us, you know, let's not, rather than losing focus, let's say it positively and say, let us refocus our efforts on doing what's right for the students in the buses. I have talked to the drivers and the monitors on numerous occasions, and I've asked them, I said, you know what, you as a driver and as a monitor have lost focus of who you're here to serve. I said, so a good way of getting that focus back is imagine your son or your grandchild in that bus. Turn around and imagine they're sitting right there next to you. Would you do the things that you're doing right now if they were sitting back there? And so we get a lot of lip service, and we get a lot of, yes, we're going to do it, but actions speak louder than words. They can say they're going to do it, but today, they're not. So the main purpose that Martha has of me coming in here is to give you an update and to answer your questions. My main purpose to coming in before you was to plead the case for the safety of our students. So I didn't mean to dwell on that or to get out of order, so let me continue with the next condition.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Any more questions?
No. More just a statement, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I don't think we've ever lost sight of that. I just think we know that we need that. And by all means, I don't think we've ever said no to GPS. In fact, I think most of us were very wholeheartedly about GPS. We just need to make sure that we provide transparency and get more than one bid. And that's really what we've sort of delayed the process. It's nowhere, it's not going anywhere, and we're all behind it. So more than a statement than anything.
May I respond to that?
Sure.
It's not that I'm saying that anybody's lost focus, and that's just one of the two integral parts of the question. Mm-hmm. You know, the tools and everything are very important. The other part to that is that we've given the drivers the opportunity to think that they're untouchable. Be it by action, be it by an oversight or whatever, they really, and I've been told, I mean, you know, and I really do appreciate people when they talk frank. Mm-hmm. You know, let's cut to the chase and tell me the truth. You know, what do we need to do to fix things? It's very distressing when the apathy of the workers in the area, apathy is a bad thing. But so is the thing that it really doesn't matter what you or administration is saying. If we talk to the right people, we're going to get it done. And I'm not saying that's true or false. I'm just here advising or sharing that thought with you. That is the pervasive feeling with many of the drivers in the area. For whatever reason, they've been led to believe that they can't be replaced. They're being led to believe that their services are so important and that there are few drivers out there that want to work for the district that they're untouchable. The truth of the matter is that the reason that we have a problem with driver shortage, by the way, that's not just down here, it's many districts in the area in the states, it's not necessarily having to do with the fact that they're a unique group. It's the way we manage the group. Right now, as you look at the routes, we have many routes that shouldn't be run. You've got an exaggerated number of routes that are being serviced. You've got routes with 6 or 7 kids on there, and by the time, and that's what the electronic tools do, they capture not just the maximum number of students that are on the bus, but also the averages by day. So while you may have 6 or 7 students on a bus, you're really only transporting 4 a day. You've got 4 or 5 routes right off the bat that are transporting 4 students per day. So I would say that in response, that I'm not saying that people need to are unfocused. I'm saying here that perhaps we do a better job at from the bottom to the top to refocus, but more importantly, also to realize that whenever a driver or a monitor complain to anybody, it has nothing to do with the improvement of the department. It has nothing to do with the safety of the student. It primarily has to do what's best for me. I'm losing hours. I don't have the routes that I want. So those are the type of things that I'm alerting you to the fact that that is a prevalent, pervasive thought in the department. And I think that collectively, we all have to work together to diffuse, to ensure that they realize that they are as accountable for the safety of the students as the teachers are in the classroom, because the bus is an extension of the classroom.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Another question?
Yeah, you mentioned right now that you have some, and I don't know the, of course, I'm not doing your job and I don't intend to do your job. Obviously, some of the changes have been positive from what you're sharing with us. You mentioned some of the students that have been on the bus, or some of the bus routes have been 6 to 7 students. I'm not sure, and probably you're the one that knows, 6 to 7 students, are those special ed students?
Yes.
Okay.
Not
how do we accommodate those?
See, but the thing about it is that the students who are being transported are not the ones that are severely handicapped in wheelchairs. And in previous years,
and what does the ARD? What does the ARD says? Does it have to be special ed transportation?
No. I'm sure that the ARD and the IEP speak to the fact that they should be driven
regular
in special ed bus. What I'm saying is that the numbers, that the state's efforts to mainstream some of these students has decreased the number of students that qualify for true special ed. You used to have fewer routes, special ed routes, than you do now.
Mm-hmm.
You're transporting, from what I've seen, you're transporting fewer or the same number of students, yet you have 5 or 6 routes more. And so, again, you know what, the idea here is I'm not going to cut the routes, but I'm going to suggest that we look closely at that.
Well, exactly, and I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying that it's something that you need to work closely with a special ed director.
Yes.
Something that's internal, of course, and that's what I'm saying. Some parts of the changes are coming.
Yes.
They're
not all special ed. There's some of the regular routes that actually consolidated, too, that have fewer drivers.
Right,
also.
And some of them might be mainstream that could ride the regular bus, too. So something that we need to look at, not we, but the administration. You mentioned earlier cell phones. It's been brought to my attention. I'm not going to speak for the rest of the board, but cell phones, that employees have been using cell phones while on duty, and I don't think that's right. So yes, thank you for addressing that.
We even had some drivers that allegedly, even right now that it's hot, are wearing a thin jacket and they're running the cable from their things to the ear to speed it up to their ear. So the idea, you know, capturing is very difficult to everybody. Thank God we live in a great nation like the United States of America. Everybody's entitled to due process. You can't just go out there and accuse that person. You know, you did it. And even though you saw the person, it's my word against theirs. So those are the type of tools that would impact the safety of the students on the bus and also protect the employee.
Right. And you also mentioned that administration and board members are the ears of the employees. The administration and board members are the ears to some of these employees.
I alluded to the fact that that's what I've been advised.
Well, I'm going to clarify that. It's some of the issues have been brought to our attention, and it's impossible for us to ignore them. We go to the groceries, we go Walmart, this is community, gas station. It's impossible, like, Yes, we have eventually said, you know what, you need to follow proper procedures. I mean, of course, there is a Senate Bill 135 that board members can come, employees can come to board members. So
I fully recognize that, and my purpose of letting you know is that perhaps, thank you for sharing that, it appears that maybe your name is being used in vain, because it empowers the employees, it empowers their actions at that level. And it's very, I'm not, as you said, I'm here for a short duration to get a certain job done. With the hours that I'm working, I don't have the time to be out there researching is it true or not. I'm just alerting you to the board and administration to the fact that that's the perception at that level. And then I'm suggesting that we can work collaboratively to find solutions to diffuse that situation so that the employees know that, yes, you can talk to them. But the persons that you really need to talk to get the problem solved sit right there, right back here, whoever takes a full-time position, and the superintendent.
And that's what I'm saying. We appreciate you doing that because you're making some changes. I mean, that's what we're here for. You said the kids first.
Yes, ma'am.
Kids first. And that's what our main focus is.
I said kids first.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
ma'am.
The second condition. Yes,
ma'am. When parents, employees, whoever comes to us, I always make it a point to direct them to where they're supposed to be going to address the issues. And I know that.
Yeah, they just might not say the same thing.
We direct them to who they need to go to. Mm-hmm. We do listen, but we know that there's a change. Thank you.
The second change in operations that we did is that the shop mechanics were not working on the vehicles. Shop mechanics were actually almost full-time drivers. Consequently, there were few, any repairs that were being engaged on the vehicles. Your preventive maintenance cycle for the buses are extremely behind. Not only does that impact the life of your vehicle, but it also avoids warranties. And you're talking about high dollar value assets. So immediately upon getting down there, I did talk to Ms. Matthews and Martha. And what we did was we changed two of the, Ms. Carrasco, sorry. We did move two of the drivers, the head mechanic and another mechanic, out of the driving arena and into the shop. And they're, for the most part, they're there right now. We do have a third mechanic that, because of the way the routes are situated, he is still having to drive on a frequent basis. Unfortunately, I also have to report that because of the way the drivers are allowed to ask for leave, be it the 72 hours or the emergencies, we're short drivers. Example, on Friday, I believe we're short six drivers. So our first priority is to get to the students to school. So we have had to use the mechanics to continue driving on occasion, not on a regular basis, but on occasion. There continues to be a barrier in moving to improve operational efficiency and effectiveness in the shop. I do have a couple of concerns regarding competencies in regards to the type of quality of work that's being engaged in the shop. And the results, there's a significant increase in the mechanic work that is being performed on the fleet. However, the shop is so far behind that getting caught up is problematic and impacted by outside forces such as the availability of clerical support, continued driving responsibilities, competency, and expectations from other departments based on prior practices. As you look at the shop, we're having to work from the bottom up in regards to the capturing of information. We're missing inventories for any and all of the equipment in the shop. I already mentioned that they didn't keep fuel logs. I think there's kind of like a haphazard log on propane that was used. I kind of looked at that and didn't really serve the purpose. They do have a homegrown access file that captures certain type of information, but it was not kept up to date. So any assumptions or inferences from that information are prone to error. So this is an area that has changed quite a bit. It's changed dramatically. The drivers have been easier, the mechanics have been a little bit easier to work with, but at the same time, given the opportunity to serve as a mechanic or drive, they're picking the drive. So we are working very hard to try to change the direction of the department, the shop. And for the record, Dossier is a very good program that is used by other districts. That is a program that was approved by the trustees. We're looking at implementation beginning in the middle of June. That program will allow us to track by vehicle not only the labor hours, the overtime, but all of the parts that are used for the vehicle, the frequency with which it's serviced. So a lot of the information is going to be electronic. The problem, I believe that Ms. Earls mentioned about that data, you know, how often it's going to be captured. The initial data input is going to be significant, but once the data is in the system, it's going to be a lot easier to maintain. That's the shock. The big condition that we also had to work with was changing the dynamics within the transportation department. In my opinion, the support from the previous supervisor and the clerical team is inconsistent, ineffective, inefficient, and contributed to the overall lack of performance of the departments. I mentioned several of the things, so I'm not going to bore you with the same information, but simple processes to capture, to manage things such as overtime, the methodology that was used to assign extracurricular trips, things, training, and that's on the employee side. We expect the employees to drive safely, to treat the students safely, to be able to file incident reports. We have to do a better job of training. The training was lacking at best. The way and manner in which routes, the drivers and vehicles are assigned, I mentioned already, changes on a day-by-day basis. I'll give you a good example. We talked about special ed. We had an employee within the department switch drivers and switch vehicles. I still don't understand why to change it on her own volition and change a student that special ed is required to be restrained from a seatbelt bus to one that didn't have one. So those are the type of things that we're fighting on a day-to-day basis. I already mentioned that the number of routes that are needed are you're actually driving a lot more than what's being needed. The previous, I've been advised, I can't substantiate it and can't speak for the gentleman, but it appears that they worked in an environment where it was don't ask, don't tell. So Ms. Matthews mentioned about the incident reports. It's been very difficult to get the drivers to file incident reports, and that's primarily because they weren't required to do so in the past. Should they have an incident report, they talk to somebody, and that report went in the circular file, or if it was very serious, it was going to get out that something did happen. I have advised Ms. Matthews and I've advised Ms. Carrasco that as I started, I was able to spend a significant amount of my time working on improvements. The reverse is true right now. I'm spending 80%+ of my time dealing with incident reports and parent complaints. And if afforded the opportunity, I didn't bring it, but I can provide it. I think it would be important for some of these, for administration, upper administration, or the trustees to talk to some of these parents. Because out of their own mouth, they're the ones that see safety issues. It's taken us 2 hours plus to transport some of our students home. Now, to me, that's too long. You have a student on the bus, especially now, they're dehydrated, they're not eating, they've got homework to do. So how is the department's operation supporting the instructional goals? I would say that we're not doing a very good job of that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Could I ask a question?
Of course.
Do we not have some kind of electronic bus route finder?
I know. Nothing.
We have routes, but that's one of the reasons that the electronic tools are on there. We have routes, but the routes are not being followed. The drivers stop where they want, when they want, if they want. There's ideas that the drivers are actually providing preferential treatment to people they shouldn't be. We've got a lot of routes that are really built wrong. So the idea here is that to implement the tools that are going to set up a system that helps you maintain the routes in an effective and efficient manner.
So for example, sometimes Mike Gonzalez, he recently helped us out, he went outside GES, he's sitting there, he's observing. So, you know, that you have the human component that's monitoring it, which, you know, mm-hmm. that leaves a lot of room to get around a lot of things.
I've talked to many of the drivers, and some have admitted it, and some have not denied it. But the idea here is if you look at the length of the routes are not timed. So routes that may take an hour and a half or 2 hours are taking 3.5 hours. You've got people, Ms. Matthews brought to my attention that we have some monitors that are guaranteed a minimum of 20 hours. If the bus, for whatever reason, doesn't make, then they take it upon themselves to sit on another, on another bus with another monitor just to get their hours. So the idea here is when you look at the money and the overtime that is going to the department, those funds could be better utilized by improving the instructional programs. Mm-hmm. So consequently, as I mentioned, I keep on mentioning, it's not so much that I'm here, I'm in favor of the drivers. I think that everything we're doing is to help the drivers improve performance. We're developing the documentation systems so that should they choose not to, that administration has the information that they need to help modify the driver's behavior to what the expectations are. And should they choose not to, then the administration has options if the documentation is in place. Other things that came to our attention was the lack of compliance with guidelines. I think that all of us are aware of the fact that there's a positive employee relations between the supervisor, clerical support team, drivers, and monitors was and is virtually non-existent. There's been some changes within the clerical support team, and we expect for additional changes to be made with the clerical support team that's in place right now. They've been given an opportunity to meet the district's expectations and debate they haven't. So those type of things just continue to contribute to the system not working. They perpetuate the system that's in place. So either we make those tough calls right now, the tough changes, and give them an opportunity to do something else, or we continue to put up with the same problems that we have. In many cases, decisions that are made in the office are not in the students, districts, or department's best interests. In the short time that I mentioned this already, we developed a progressive discipline approach. I've sent that to administration, so we are documenting every single instance of noncompliance. We're getting a verbal, written, and then they're going to be coming up to HR. As of today, I believe I've requested 3 investigations, and I've got 2 more that are pending. And those are things that are serious enough to warrant somebody out of my position to investigate. We've implemented a progressive discipline model. Another thing that I mentioned that I don't do anything without alerting administration. I was very worried about the seniority system. The seniority system and the manner in which the department was assigning extra routes is costing the district a lot of money. You have a lot of drivers that are the upper end of the 95, 100 hours every 2 weeks. You've got a lot of employees that are down here at the 66 per hour a week. The seniority system was never intended to be used for the field trips. It was intended only to be used for the initial assignment of the routes, but somebody changed it to do something else. Consequently, the drivers with the most seniority were the ones that were bidding on the trips with more hours, consequently increasing the overtime and the pay that those higher-end employees were making. So with HR's help, we did meet with the employees last week, I believe, and they were advised that the system is no longer going to be effective, and once a timekeeper is hired, that the supervisor, the timekeeper, will be assigning routes based on overtime implications and what's best for the district and the department as a whole. I would also like to ask, it's very interesting that when you look at your custodians, you know, if a student goes out there at the office in the bathroom where the bathroom is stuck up, and the head custodian or the secretary tells the custodian to clean it up or fix it, you know, that employee does not have the option of saying, I don't want to do it. It's interesting that in transportation, you've got a lot of routes that need to be run, and when the call comes out for the drivers, we have to ask the drivers, do you want to drive the route? And for the most cases, especially right now, since people are not happy with the guidelines, many of the drivers are turning down the routes. Many of the drivers are calling in sick. Many of the drivers are calling in late. Consequently, we are having a problem with we're missing 6 drivers on the road. So I don't know, it's something that I plan to approach with HR about the process that allows the drivers to say, no, I don't want to drive around.
Mr. Herrera.
Yes.
You mentioned right now something about seniority and the hours.
Yes.
That it was changed. Who changed it, to your knowledge?
I don't have firsthand knowledge of who changed it. All I can tell you is it's been in place for many years.
Because it was in the board.
I can tell you that HR didn't know about it, and when I brought it to Ms. Velasco's attention. She said, what?
There's
other things that are occurring. I'll give you another good example. And it's not just special ed students. We had calls from schools coming in to drive students home if they're sick, and the department was doing it. We have instances where you're driving extra routes in the evening that you're not getting reimbursement for.
Parents are not picking up their students?
No. They're sick students?
Yes.
Okay. Ask a question.
So,
Ms. Hira, before you go on, is it okay if I ask a question?
Yes.
This is outlined. You said that your job here was twofold, sort of audit and implementation of sort of corrective action plan. Is that correct?
The first stage is make recommendations. The second is to implement if approved.
Do you have a report based on what you're presenting as to, I mean, there's just so much, obviously, that you're covering, that you're uncovering, really, not covering. is there a way that we get a copy of sort of that report? Because I think it's a lot for us to digest and say, wow, this is, you know, bigger than what we can imagine. I was just wondering if we could get a copy of that.
I have some cheat sheets here, but I can expand on that and make it a little bit better. But I do request that once I put that in place, I'm compelled to follow the chain of command. I have Ms. Manson.
Oh, of course, of course.
HR review it, the superintendent review it, and then it would
be. Of course. I just think there's just so much volume.
And then with that, though, when we get that, are we going to take the second step, Mr. Arreta, which you said that we would approve the plan? That, well, you've seen these are the pitfalls.
Or are you doing it already?
We haven't gotten to the part on the plan, on the electronic rules, and Ms. Matthews has already asked me to put a little report on the tools, but, you know, at 19 hours, and I'm not complaining, I like what I'm doing.
So 19 hours, has to do with evaluations this week, we've only got 19 hours, so
So we really think that the fact that we've been able to do a lot speaks highly of the people that you have in place, both in the leadership at the executive director level and with HR and the superintendent.
I think you're selling yourself short, Mr. Hedda.
What do they mean 19 hours? What do you mean by that? Can you not? Yes. I mean, can the board not give him more hours?
No.
He doesn't want any more. Look at him, he's all new.
He's retired, Lori.
So he's at 19
I see the call,
hours,
though.
He's a recent retiree, so there's a different set of rules that apply to recent retirees. So he is giving us 19 hours a week. And I do want to say, Mr. Medina, thank you for recognizing that, because I think he's done an excellent job.
Yes, you're selling yourself way too short, Mr. Arreta.
At what he's done to now. And he has gotten some pushback from the drivers.
Rightly so, yeah.
We've been
see that.
Out there. I've been out there. He's had, you know, group meetings with them. We've talked to them. You know, they seem to want to make things better. So it's a work in progress. I mean, we're working with them, and you know, things are changing. I can tell you that since he's been on board, the number of hotline calls and the number of complaints coming to HR have been reduced significantly.
Oh, really? That's awesome. We expect the opposite.
You know, even the about that he's saying, and I wasn't privy to all the information that he was providing you. I mean, what he was going to talk to you about tonight, even though, you know, he does call me, he does inform me and Ms. Brigham and Ms. Matthews, you know, when there's an issue that he thinks that's, you know, something that's going to blow up, he'll call and say, you know, I just, you know, I'm going to do this, and tells us why. So every step of the way, we're being informed of the actions that are being taken. Like he says, I'm only here on a temporary basis. Once I leave, he says, I want you all to understand, you know, why he's making certain recommendations and procedural changes. So, you know, the whole purpose here tonight was just to introduce him to you and for him to just give you an update. You know, it might sound negative, but I think it's a move in the right direction. And I think the drivers, at least from what I've heard, and the ones that have come to my office for other reasons, you know, not complaining like they used to, but you know, they feel that, you know, we'll work with it and the structure that they need, and it seems like it's coming together.
Did they get the character education?
Probably not.
The customer service training?
Well, we you know, with that, with you all approved for the bus drivers all to be uniform on the same work calendar.
And in that calendar,
you know, they are given a week's worth of training that they're, you know, they're going to have training opportunities. So the whole purpose of doing that 185.
But that will come. That will come this year. We haven't had that luxury up until this year when we asked for it. So we didn't have any scheduled trainings.
So for the next school year, we will go ahead and implement and make sure that, you know, the training is well grounded for the expectations that we have of them.
I do have a question. I know she's gone. Left you in charge. Yes.
Martha said something that's important. I would hate to leave this on a negative note.
Oh, of course.
Ms. Mayo mentioned to me as I started, and she's very accurate. She stated that there's a lot of good employees. There are a lot of good employees in the transportation department. There are some that may have been misled. There are some that maybe because of they were coerced, or you know, they followed peer pressure or whatever. Whatever the reason, you do have some employees that are very good. You have some employees that are very competent. You have some that are very caring, but you also have the other group that needs to be managed. And I think that that's what's needed: strong management, and we need to hold the line.
And that's fair. It's usually very few that kind of ruin it for the lot. How long are you employed with the district, Martha?
I have no idea yet. It's on a day-by-day basis. I was beginning to think that maybe today was it.
No, you're doing great things, Mr. Haddad. By all means, we're asking the questions just because we see such good things coming out of that update that you're providing. So don't take it as a negative from us. What we're trying to do is just trying to make those correct changes. How long is he slated, considering the retiree rules?
Well, we offered him for 2 months, but we may extend that for a couple of more months.
I thought you were saying
Us through the summer, to carry us through the summer, mm-hmm. and possibly while we get the transportation supervisor position filled. This past Sunday, we advertised in the El Paso Times. We do have a pool of candidates, however, maybe only about 3 qualified. I wanted to have a more robust pool, so we went ahead and posted in the Sunday Times. So we'll see, we'll run it a couple of more weeks and see what we get.
Mr. Adana, that department has had problems for as long as I can remember. And I would like to commend you. It sounds like you've got a good handle on it, and that you're providing some changes that will benefit our kids and our district as a whole. And I hope that if it lends itself and your status as retired, I know there are some things that you cannot do as a retired individual, at least for a year or so. But if the opportunity lends itself, I hope that you'll consider maybe staying with us.
Thank you. Very kind.
Good stuff.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure. On the mechanics, you were mentioning the problems we're going to need to service the fleet that people are behind.
I'm sorry, sir.
On the mechanics.
Mechanics, yes.
Yes. Do you think by getting
the idea here is that I speak loud, so I usually don't need the mic. But the idea here is that we are trying to use contracted services to the extent that we need. We're having some issues, or not issues. We're having a problem meeting the demand for, as an example, air conditioners. Maybe the air conditioners are down. They need to be serviced, so we're contracted for that. There are some other heavy-duty jobs that the mechanics can't handle, so we can issue those out. But at this point in time, trying to look at a part-time mechanic, we need to make sure that we are comfortable with the leadership of the lead mechanic, and that what we're doing is in line with what should be done. Right now, we've got 2 mechanics that are out there, and I don't know, I can't speak to the performance yet. So getting another part-timer in would just compound the problem by having a third body in there that we'd have to try to assess whether they know what they're doing or not. Okay.
And I do thank you for looking at you with that record. And I trust in your leadership.
I brought this stat from the National School Boards Association. I knew somebody would need this. It's a nice little booklet called Transportation Efficiency and Effectiveness. Maybe you could pull some, it's for you, if it's got your name written all over it. Maybe you could pull some of these articles and, you know, pass them around.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Same thread.
This time it does not require much.
I just wanted to say that the first step is like really solid leadership. So even though you found a lot of things, it's a good step. If you missed your board, you have a bond project manager, Fred, you're starting with some really solid leadership.
And we also need to be cognizant of the need to purchase the items.
Yes.
As soon as possible.
Correct, and put them on our priority list for
this coming. Because I believe only the GPS was brought forth. It sounds like there might be some more software that may be needed. I'd say bring it all, and you know, bidding should be fairly quick, at least proposal wise.
Routing software also for the routes. Mm-hmm. So
bring it all.
Whatever you need.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There you go. I had to say it.
Item 2, meeting corrective action plan update. Ms. Brigham,
this is what I'm doing. Leave me alone.
Because she's a track.
It is an absolute pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
I'm not Mr. Medina Appleson, so.
I ain't going to say what you're buying, but it's all good.
Yeah, we just wanted to give you an update on some of the things that's happening with the corrective action.
So I'm going to walk through the corrective activities in the plan. And plan activities begin on page 6.
6 or 9?
9.
Do you have that information?
We got 9, right?
9.
Talking about this or activities?
Okay,
wait a minute.
It's on page.
Maybe I'm looking at them. No? Oh, 6 of your pages. Okay, so it's on ours, it's 15.
Okay.
You got it?
Yes, it's your page 15.
So the corrective activity is there that we're going to share the CAP with the affected personnel. And I just wanted to let you know that the CAP was shared with the leadership on April 19th. And then also the CAP was also shared on May 1st with the individuals that attended the DAC meeting, that there was no turnout. And so we rescheduled that to see if we could get better attendance.
DAC? Really? Low attendance?
And that's key, that all the affected people know about the plan, and so we can get the work accomplished. The CAP project implementation team consists of us four, and it's mainly the consultants that are working with the campus personnel on a day-to-day basis, and they work with the personnel. We meet once a week, and then they give us updates My role is to update, you know, the status of each corrective activity and then also collect the evidence and the documentation and making sure that everything is functioning properly. So my role is more like a project manager for this CAP monitoring activity. Of course, Ms. Brigham leads the group. And here on the corrective activity number two, we see that we've met on a weekly basis since the middle of March. And we actually have a meeting tomorrow where we're going to be talking about graduation, students that may be in danger of not meeting their graduation. So we're going to be talking about that and investigating what we can do and how we can support those students. Going on to the corrective activity number three, and basically all it says there is that once I verify that a corrective activity has been completed, I'm going to put verified at the end of that in the status column. And so you'll know when you follow this this CAP that that one corrective activity has been completed. Going on to corrective activity number six, we have a graduation plan procedures that will be adopted. That's a corrective activity. One action that we've done related to the implementation of the graduation plans is that the Dr. Althoff has worked with the counselors and various other personnel at the campus, and the four-year plans have been implemented into the Navion system. And I actually compared the student enrollment at the high school to the activities that were in the Navion system, and they're all there, so we're good with the four-year plans in that system. So if we go on to the next one, activity number seven, PGP procedures will be adopted. Basically, the PGP regulation has been created. It's been vetted through the counselors and various other stakeholders at the campus. It's been approved by cabinet. It was actually presented today and approved. And so the next step would be to upload it to the website. And so we're pretty much complete with this corrective activity. If we go on to the next one, number eight, that regulation, attendance appeal procedures, have already been developed, approved by cabinet. They were uploaded to the website today, and a notification was sent out notifying principals and administrators that this regulation is in place and needs to be followed.
It has been followed as effective of 2 weeks.
Right. Did they have to sign off that they got that?
Yes.
And one of the things that I met with Ms. Massey about 5 o'clock this afternoon, and they have finished the 9 through 12, what we call an ACC, it's attendance review committees, and they said they were about 98% done. There's a few kids that they have that might be stragglers. They're going to run another report as far as tomorrow. They just went like this, and they go, God, this was a long process. And I said, I know. And they, but what they said it's going to be so much easier next year. So I wanted to let you know that, you know, I talked to administration this afternoon. So this has been, remember, if you remember, I had to stop the attendance appeals from happening because there was no rhyme or reason on how they were doing it, and there was no set of documentation to handle. Now there is. So, and they've been quite busy, haven't they?
Ms. Brigham?
Everything's documented.
Can you just say the word ARC again?
No, I'm not going to. Come
on, Ms. Brigham.
I'm not sure why, but I'm not going to. I
have a question. On page 17, procedure number 4, this person responsible, you just put there, Canutillo High School.
Superintendent?
Can you give me the page number again?
Yeah, our page 17, it's the procedure four.
His page okay. 8.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. I missed out on that page.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, it's 17.
Page 8. I'm sorry?
Page
8.
Okay.
8 of his audit, 17 of ours.
Okay. Go ahead.
And you put there persons responsible, Canopy High School?
Oh, number 4. The persons responsible.
Yeah, I probably should put Canopy High School admin.
Okay.
Sorry. And that one, if you notice, we originally had May, and now we're doing 6. And this is revised as far as for the superintendent process, which is coming in. So. Most of the things we didn't wait, but some of the stuff we have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Could I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
On our 12, year 3, the resource persons, 1, 11, and 17, I know don't exist anymore.
That's a lot of numbers.
What page was that again, Ms. Lauren?
12 or 3.
Our page 12.
Our 12, year 3, the resource yes. people. 1, 11, and 17.
Yes.
So.
And there might be some others.
That's what
caught my eye.
That's exactly the ones.
Okay.
And number 6 also.
No.
Wow. Oh yeah, number 6 is Amy now.
I need to check on that.
I think it's Amy.
Okay.
You're on 9.
Chair. On going back to page 11, the attendance of closed procedures?
Yes, ma'am.
That will probably be ongoing for the last year of school, correct? Yep. Because once it falls under the 90%, say somebody has 8 absences right now and gets an absence the day before the last day of school?
No, what we're gonna do is, for some of them, yes, they'll be dealing with it as far as the accident, it's gonna be predetermined dates when there's gonna be a group of them. What they're gonna run is, they usually run it a lot of them right now, we're looking at juniors and seniors as far as credits and all that, but all the other stuff, yes, continual process, just like the PGP.
This was my style. I had some gummies.
Because they were 18 or 19 or whatever. They chose to do it. But it was still a documentation process for the ETF. You had no absence and did not fulfill
to.
Your contract.
That's why I did that.
And our scary part of that is that a lot of them are still under the influence that, oh, we'll still get by with it, but we really have to stick to our guns on that and try it. But we've shown documentation. The teachers are fantastic. They're getting information. They're showing what they are showing. Opportunity for students to make it. They're giving them every opportunity to make it. It's not a giveaway. You have to be there. You have to be present. You have to do work.
It's hard at the end, with especially the seniors.
They keep thinking, oh, we'll still get by no matter what. Mm-hmm. We're trying to stick to our guns.
Their reality is different for us.
So we know. That's, yeah.
Okay, good.
So the next few, 10, 11, 12, and 13, the way that I approached these, I had a meeting with the interim director of ALS and then also the EL facilitator, and discussed, you know, the actions, the activities that needed to be completed, 10, 11, 12, 13. Starting with the first one, the occupancy matrix, the one that we have in the regulation right now only includes the courses that we're going to accept credit for, and it doesn't have the other side of courses that we're not going to accept credit for. And so we've talked to them about that, and there's two approaches to this. We can either say in a certain subject area we're not going to accept credit because we know those foreign courses don't align, you know, with the content that's being taught here. you know, in our school district. And some examples that they brought to my attention is English. Where, you know, English here is different from English in you know, Mexico. Also, social studies is another example that they've brought in. So they have an option, I guess, to in the regulation to say that for these subject areas, we're not going to accept credit, or we could list out those courses in the regulation individually.
But the trouble with the thing is, we're thinking we might have to do a combination of both, because there's no way, I don't think that break or anyone else knows how many courses are offered throughout Mexico. So I mean, it would be pages long and people aren't going to use.
So do you just do it on an as-needed basis?
No, what we're doing right now is like for the English, we're absolutely exploring the English, because English right now, it would be like taking Spanish. You know, you might not know. It's totally different. It might be conversational. So you're not getting the texts are not at all aligned. Mm-hmm. So we know we're not going to give any credit for English. We know we're not going to give any credit for U.S. history, Texas history.
That's not
okay. So, you know, I mean, we're not going to do that because now it's easier to say we're not going to do that than to make a list of everything, because there's hundreds of.
Understand.
Well, you need to know that we are updating that.
I have a question. Are you planning to do this regulation, or I don't know if you're planning to document it here, what kind of system you're planning to use to do this transcript?
Well, the foreign transcript.
Yes.
Audit, there's a form that I like to be updated. I think it was part of the audit where we had put in the recommendation that we need to see the workflow with that form. And so there's, you know, about five people that actually touch that form. And so every time, you know, somebody new touches the form, we're recommending them to sign it, to date it, and then when they pass it on to the next person, they would also do the same, so we could keep track of the timing.
I understand that, but are you planning to use an agency? Are you planning to hire someone, a professional, to do that?
To modify the form?
Not the form itself. I mean, who's going to do the audit on that? Someone from Mexico comes. No. Who's going to be verifying that?
The school.
Are you planning to use Lucha?
No, we are not using Lucha. Only we're using Lucha if they're coming from Korea, if they're coming from. We have had some from China.
So basically, our approach is.
Because we can't beat them.
Let me share something with you. Because one of my relatives came from Mexico, and she came enrolled in January. And it took 4 months for that Lucha transcript.
Oh, absolutely, it takes that
and
long.
And I don't think it should take that long for them.
No, we have to place them anyways.
It's not a matter of placement, but whether the reclassification, and here we go again, if the reclassification happens, depending on when they enroll, are we going to go back to that reclassification if and when the students get tested? You see, how is it going to affect, and how is it going to affect this, not only the students, but the district?
Well, we've, you know, had experience with Lucha over the last couple few years, and so we've built that knowledge base, you know, what they recommend, so we already know what courses they're going to give credit for or not. So that's when we've developed our internal matrix, mm-hmm. and we're going to make the evaluations based on that matrix that's mm-hmm. in the regulation.
Right.
So we're going to apply that matrix, and then it has to flow through those five people within 20 days. If it's not completed within 20 days, our recommendation is that the last person reports to internal audit that it wasn't, you know, completed in 20 days, and then we'll go ahead and see, well, where did the ball drop? You know, why wasn't it completed, you know, within a timely manner?
Okay. All right. Any more questions? No. Go ahead.
So basically, number 11 there is establishing timelines for all these people involved in this process. And so I think I can, you know, facilitate this process by contacting the various people that are going to be involved and getting timelines from them, maybe facilitating a meeting where I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to contact these people, and then each person's going to say maybe like 10 days, and but we have to get it all done in 20 days, and so maybe facilitating a meeting where we can come to agreement as to how long it's going to take per person so we get this done in 20 days.
Is it just timelines, or is there also sort of reprimands for not following timelines? Because we fall into the, yeah, we'll give you a timeline, but if there's no accountability on the back end.
We have an in policy, it has to be done in 20 days. So what we're going to have to do is, it will be done in 20 days, and if not, like I said, there will be an audit trail. That
20 business days?
Yes.
Okay.
And then we know where the ball was dropped, and then we will handle that appropriately after we see how it's done.
Can I ask a question, Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
When these new people who disappeared on this list over here at the beginning, when they are replaced, will y'all let them? I mean, because they're going to have to be on.
There's going to be a training. We have a training piece.
Okay.
This, if you'll see that. Yes.
Because they need to be brought up to speed and not flounder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why this plan is not.
It's a living document.
Over a year, because we have to have a training component. And it's not just a flash in the pan training, but to go back and check on the training.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So going on to activity number 12, I think, you know, I just mentioned that we need to update that form with the signatures and the going on to activity number 13, that's a development of a procedures manual, or we can also incorporate that into the regulation. I've already had discussions with them, with each, you know, point in this activity, and they have agreed that, you know, these items are going to be included in the updated regulation. Going on to activity number 14, there are current TLC, that's the Learning Center, where the credit recovery courses are administered, and there has been policies and procedures in place, and right now, Dr. Althoff is working with the TLC lead teacher to update those policies. Those policies have also been presented to Cabinet today, and Ms. Althoff has done a preliminary analysis as to some basic questions that we need to answer to be able to modify these procedures. And so that's kind of where we're at with this activity. The next one is activity number 15, student assessment testing procedures will be reviewed and updated. And
the DTC is a district testing coordinator under persons responsible. The CTC is the campus testing coordinator, just so y'all know. And then Mr. Dillard and I have been working on this, Mr. Dillard mainly. And if you notice, I have April, May, June, and July, because those are all the testing dates that we have. And so...
May finishes up this week, mm-hmm. So you know, we have 130 that have still not shown up that have made a test of some sort between now and Friday. And that sophomores. Found that out today, so we're pushing, we're beating down doors. So once we get them in, we should be able. But other than that, testing has been looking super. I mean, it's been monitored. There's no. It's looking very, very good.
So going on to 16, LPAC procedures, and so these LPAC procedures have been drafted. They've been reviewed today, also by Cabinet. And so we had revisions to the procedures, so we're going to go ahead and send it back to the department. We'll continue that loop till we have finalized procedures that are approved by Cabinet. Going on to the next section is technology enhancements, and that is 19 through 23. And we, internal audit had a meeting with the system programmer to discuss all these technology enhancements that we're recommending in the CAP. And for a couple of those, the first two, the 19 and 20, There's already some reports that I think we can build upon to create the information that we're recommending here. So it doesn't look like we're going to have to start from scratch. There's already some reports that we can use. We also discussed activity number 22, where we want to identify the newcomer students as soon as possible in the process, and so we can make sure that they receive their credits within 20 days. And so we, before we even got into the technical aspects, we talked about the term newcomer and what group we wanted to define. And then we also talked about the roles and responsibilities, who would actually be doing the flagging in the system. And so the next step would be to bring in the stakeholders as to who's going to be using the system. And then this one is pretty close to being done.
We've been working with ProLogic, and they have been pretty responsive to filling this need for us. And then that would help with what Mr. Medina was just saying earlier. How do we get to know they're going to be there? And guess what? It's now we can able to do a report on when everybody comes in by days, and we'll have it. So
moving on to activity number 23. And here, if there was a concern at the campus where if there was these monitoring forms that the teachers were to fill out for each EL student, M1 and M2, after they exit, you know, the program, they're classified as M1, monitored 1 year, and then monitored the second year after they've exited the program. So we need to monitor those students every 6 weeks. A lot of these reports that the teachers were requested to fill out and then return back to their monitoring teacher, it seemed like it just wasn't happening. And so to assist, you know, with this process, you know, we've been speaking with the system programmer to see if we can, you know, develop those reports in the system just to facilitate that process.
Yeah.
The other thing is that we need to show the campus that, you know, it is a priority, and that, you know, we need to get, you know, these forms completed and then return to the monitoring teacher. So I think it's twofold. It's a system implementation, and it's also a priority from leadership.
And Mr. Medina, you had just said that the next thing down at Searles, we were talking about is training. And if you look, everything else is training. Yeah. And what I'll probably be doing is I'll be working with HECTA and the high school and school resources and ALS and special ed, and to come up with a schedule for this type of training. And it will be, I hate the word mandatory, but it's going to have to be mandatory training, because so that we can continue to with sign-in sheets, because it's evident that people are not using the system. They're using things that were in place by tradition by 10 years ago, and I look at them. So what we're going to do is, you know, have we're working with the school resources. I'm going to create a menu for every category of people that are going to be coming in, so that they would have those reports. All they have to do is put the data in their friends.
Now, is this one-time training, or is this going to be ongoing, like throughout the year?
For August, we also have another one, and then in October, which we can add to this. Then we have.
I think it's important because we want to show them.
But you know, what we're doing is we're developing this first. Then we're going to put it in, and then we're going to have them, the stakeholders, say, okay, when's the next time you need this? What else do you need to follow up? So we're going to have. We already know we'll have an October one because we have the Page Clearinghouse. So October will be definitely written into this also, because you have to remember this is for the CAP, the Corrective Action Plan. What we need to do is go one step further and put admin in there, and that will become a yearly process. And probably, you know, the first year is probably a couple of times or as needed basis when we're monitoring.
Thank you.
So within that training section, if you look at activity number 31, there has been some training that has already occurred. The ethics and integrity presentation was provided to leadership.
Is this where they signed on the ethics?
Yeah, what we're also doing here is
leadership only.
We're fine-tuning this a little bit more for the, because Martha Cadasco and I presented this. What we're doing is we're making it a little bit more, rather than me just, you know, Martha said you could put a sentence up there and I can speak in 10 minutes. So what we're going to do is we're going to put a more structured approach to it so it will be canned, that everybody gets the same one.
Exactly.
Then I will avail myself, probably too, she doesn't know that yet, but you know, that we will avail ourselves that either we'll go do that training or we'll have a trainer at the training tomorrow that will be doing it for the entire campus, and we will collect that. So that's how we're going to do it, to get it systemic.
Go on to the next page, 36. And Mr. Dillard already spoke about, you know, the test monitoring activities and more. If you go on to activity number 38, this one here, it required the review of job descriptions, specifically the compliance director, the special funding coordinator job descriptions. And I took this a little further. I wanted to see if, you know, I could notice a gap in the federal compliance requirements as opposed to the controls that we have in place. And I used a lot of the work that the external auditors, you know, have performed. They select certain federal funds to test every year. And for I looked at 2011 and 2012. The majority of the federal funds were tested, and they came back with no findings or minor findings related to federal compliance. The one finding that appears recurring is the one related to the expenditure requirements, meeting the expenditure requirements. So what I'm proposing for that one is that we add controls to ensure that, you know, we're meeting those expenditure requirements. So I think we need to start at the beginning. We need to analyze the initial budgeted amounts that we're, you know, providing to the campuses and departments, making sure those are accurate. Also throughout the year, monitoring to make sure that the expenditure marks are being met. Currently, we're at, I think, December, we're supposed to be at 50%. I spoke to other districts, and, you know, they're at 80% in December. Increasing from 50 to about 65.
I know, we always get to the end, you're going to do.
Yeah, we do.
We talked about 80%, and there was some concerns related to cash flow, and so I wasn't... We weren't sure if we wanted to go up to the 80%, but we definitely knew that we wanted to increase it more than 50%.
I have a question to that effect. Aren't there reports that indicate what percentage you have spent out of your budget?
Yes.
So...
Even though they spend more, does that mean that they're in compliance, right?
Well, or less, which is the issue here.
So you're saying we're not compliant?
Well, like you mentioned that we're like... 50% and other
but
districts.
Those are internal
well, exactly.
To make sure that we meet the end goal of, you know, spending all our
it's
money.
Just like, it's just like a litmus test. You know, you look at it and you tell. So, say if you are in, if you're doing a Title II project, like, you know, for teacher staff development with Judy Menace. So, say it's a small grant, but say, you know, she has 100,000 and say, you're going to say by December you want 65%. So it's incumbent that you know where or have the plan for. And then what is the rest of the 45?
Is there no guidelines given to us?
Just
no.
That we have to substantially
no, we just have to
spend
it. To spend it.
No. Yeah.
Well,
it has to be in the, you know, it has to be aligned.
There, I'm going to say something to that effect, okay? There is no guidelines, but if you budget for it throughout, I mean, obviously, if we, I'm talking as an employee from the other district, if someone budgets, you know what you're going to spend throughout the year.
Yes.
Why wait?
Oh, I agree. Till the deadline.
Till the deadline. Or
why do we buy a bunch of vans and computers? Correct.
Not in May.
But there was something absolutely a reallocation that you can't
touch.
Or there could be encumbrances such as summer school. There could be encumbrances.
That is the exception.
Academic tutors, but it should be documented and put in there. We agree.
What I will say is on a monthly basis, all campuses and departments receive a monthly report with that percentage that you referred to.
Right.
And so are they aware of where their target is? And at the beginning of the year, they also get a finance calendar where it tells them in November your target is, well, this year your target was 50%. So they should have known as they watched their reports where they were.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we didn't meet that target, and so we keep pushing. And I know that leadership and then in discussions with our office managers, we remind them. And then it just comes down to
being pretty much
in that.
And that is my other suggestion. If obviously they don't, if, like you said, summer school or something, because you don't buy computers like in April, May.
Right.
Okay. Well, not you don't, but we've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But my suggestion, or maybe administration should consider doing this, if they are not going to spend it, like I know you give them a deadline. Maybe March, April. I mean, I don't know what the deadline is here. Because of the way it has to be received and all that. I mean, if they don't receive it by a certain, or spend it, or encumber it, I mean, it's gonna go away.
Right.
It's gonna go away.
And we do, we have done that. One of in discussion through personnel, when Mr. Rodriguez did approach, and let's talk about how do we do this with the budgets, and one of our approaches to next year is that perhaps a letter where the administrator, campus, or department head has to meet with with the associate superintendent or with the superintendent or with the auditors to give an explanation as to why they haven't met their deadline. I know in my past employment with the other district, I would have to face the associate superintendent if I didn't meet my target. And when I say I, it would be because I'm in the campus. Administrator
has
to show
nobody
wanted to
do that.
So maybe that's another form of getting their attention.
Mr. Medina has a comment, and I'll have another
comment. I do have a question. When they're given this budget at the beginning of the year, do they not have to submit sort of this is what I'm going to do with the budget?
Yes, they give us a budget. We give them an allocation, and they develop a budget that we enter into the system.
They give you a budget, or do they give you a plan, meaning I'm going to do this, this, and this? They give you both.
There's also an improvement plan that goes
it's very much linked to it, Mr. Medina.
Just because it's instead of being the negative, make it the positive. Here's the money, it's positive.
A couple of principals, when they do a budget amendment, what they should do is in the campus improvement plan, they absolutely do that, is you can add, say that you added, you put in the budget amendment,
it's a living document.
And it's a living document. Guess what? You can print it out, and it's the budget's done for the next year. So I told them every time you put in a budget amendment, put it in your campus improvement plan, because it's going to be hard to remember to do that. But guess what? You do it, and once you get in the habit of doing it, even if you miss one, if you have the majority of it done for you by the time that you have to do your budget.
Sounds like a regulation.
Right. The improvement plans are actually state mandated and federal mandated that as we receive these federal funds, we have to have that improvement plan in place. It's a big focus for the auditors to ensure that what you said you were going to do, you were going to buy 20 iPads.
Exactly.
What funding did you say? You said federal, but then you spent them on with local. Then all of a sudden, guess what? That's a gig because you indicated federal. I mean, there's just a lot of requirements with that plan. We just need to get them to follow it.
Go ahead and continue.
Is there a cash flow issue, as it stated before, that we couldn't meet the 80, 60, 70?
Well, it's just the way the foundation, we receive our payment, our foundation payments, and then, of course, we've got our property taxes. Our property taxes don't come in until late December, early January. Any funds that we spend from July through December, we're relying on three foundation payments. And then the federal funds, they're not advanced to us. We do it on a reimbursement. And so we have to monitor and make sure that there's enough.
So you need a bubble. You need a float on something.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha, you used to give us, is there such a report where, you remember the board used to get a report where it had the percentages by?
My department?
Yes.
I can certainly get that.
Can you
make that a monthly
payment? Yes, can you do that so we can more or less not monitor because that's on our job, but
or federal and local?
Both?
Both?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can you do that? Starting
different.
Well, we have just so we can start.
Yeah, as long as you know.
Because that's what you monitor, so please.
Thank you.
Any more questions? No? Okay, go ahead and continue.
Moving on to activity number 40. And this one was related to one student that we discovered that there were foreign transfer credits that were recommended, however, they weren't awarded. And so I've provided this documentation to the EL facilitator to ensure that the credits are awarded to this one student. Moving on to activity number 41. Oh, we already done that one. Moving on to number 45. And here is, we want to create preventive controls or strategies to ensure that parents are attending the LPAC meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the new regulation that was developed by the ALS department, there are some strategies in there. Relating to ensuring that the parents do attend the LPAC meetings. So 46, 47, and 48 are all related to the LPAC and ensuring that all those regulations are efficient and effective. Let me know if you have any questions related to any of these activities. I'm going to stop and answer any more questions. Number 55 is also related to the ALS department in developing, the out-of-country regulation, the matrix of flow chart, updating forms. And so now you can see that, a lot of these activities are starting to tie together. Mm-hmm. And that concludes the update for the CAP. Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions? Hello? No questions?
No.
No questions. We want to thank each and every one of you for your time, and I know it's been a lot of strenuous work.
Well, what we'll be doing is we're doing a lot of regulations. What we're doing is trying to make it more like a cookbook.
And they're going to be posted online too?
Yes.
Good.
But then we will begin the process of looking at all the old regulations because it's continual. But mainly what we're doing, what you need to know is this is for the corrective action plan. Mm-hmm. What we're doing there is, and some things you notice in here with that administration recommendation, because I felt some of this stuff was so linked to the corrective action plan that we needed to put them into the plan, and we did. You did a couple of those. So, but as you said before, it's going to be a process, and it has to be continued, and what gets monitored, it gets done. Mm-hmm. So, we'll continue with this. I think we've reached the threshold, didn't you say, of getting the acceptance from the high school. I mean, they now know we're here from the Boston, we're going to help, and they don't laugh at us anymore. But they regard us, I think, at least know that we're here, that we're going to try to keep them on straight and narrow and just help them. Don't you agree?
Huh? I have who's your compliance coordinator right now?
Director.
That's Maggie Grant.
Maggie Grant. And who's your external funding?
That's that's on that SUNY website.
These are full-time positions dedicated to those?
No. Anna is, and then
Maggie
is.
Wow, okay.
I think that's what I was alluding to. I think in the initial, it was we needed to get these positions filled out.
We did. I went one step further because of, because we were doing this in the CAP, looking at the funding, the external funding, and then looking at the compliance coordinator. Well, guess what I started looking at? I started looking at all the principals and the APs and found out that they weren't even linked to, compliance and the campus action plan, and it was
careful that hole you dig. Yeah.
So I was working with that, and we've already working with the HR department. So what we're saying is, just because we're looking at one thing and what we're finding is, I go this, and then I write it down, and we have to go check this one, this one, and this one, and I think it's just going to show that we're going to be so much stronger.
Mrs. Brigham, I know that he brought up this question with the compliance and the external. Would that be I know that we briefly discussed it, you and I, and it's a personnel question, but now that we're talking about it, that is two positions in one that TEA is recommending?
Yeah.
TEA, one of the things TEA told us to look into is they said they couldn't find a person, and they were correct, called the Federal Programs Director or something like that.
Federal funding, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what we did is we found a few, if you took some of the
job descriptions
from this person and some of the job descriptions from this person, we were seeing that. I think we found all the issues of it, but we're still looking at whether that's the best.
Is there no plan to create those positions separate to comply with TEA?
We don't have to. TEA said we are in compliance, okay. But what we have to do is it are we policing ourselves enough? And what we're going to say is with some of the reshuffling that we're doing, I can't answer. It's a little bit too easy to assume to answer that question. But we're going to continue to
give it to myself. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Althoff.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Diller, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Double thank you for what you did over there in the freeway. And Mr. Hector Rodriguez, well, I cut him off in the freeway. And it was my vehicle, not me.
Oh, your vehicle.
It was my vehicle.
The vehicle did not hurt.
Yes. And thank you, Ms. Brigham, for all your hard work and dedication.
Thank you, Ms. Brigham.
Thank you.
And it's ARC.
And this, we need to recommend this to the full board?
No, I just wanted somebody had asked me about.
It's just a review? Okay. So you don't need to, you wouldn't, okay.
No,
it's just
okay.
The
we
FYI.
Put this right in our, that we presented this information with you to the board?
But it doesn't need to go to TEA or?
Would this sending to TEA on a monthly basis?
So it needs board approval, doesn't it? Does it or doesn't it?
No.
Okay. I mean, there's just a requirement that I submit this report.
Okay. Then it's just.
And I just email it to the investigator.
I just want to make sure you knew it was progressing because in case somebody asked you, you
can
say,
oh,
yeah, we had a report on it.
Okay. All right.
Nathan.
Thank you very much. Thank Next you. Agenda item.
Item 2C, Poundville High School Senior Update. Ms. Britton.
Where are you going?
Okay, let me check my notes. I'm at the high school, like I said, this afternoon. We have this 365 eligible seniors. We have 300 now that we can possibly say that will graduate. We definitely can tell you there's probably 18 that will not, and the rest are in abeyance.
That's awesome.
The rest of what?
The rest of what? Remember, we have about 60. Now, let me give you a big
60?
Here. Let me tell you.
No.
They've all had contracts. They've all been in the attendance review committee. they've all been told what they need to do. If they don't follow the contract, if they don't turn in the work, but they have, we know who they are, we know their names, we know their parents know. So I would say, that's what I'm saying, maybe 18 of those, I'm going to do it. I mean,
it's just not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. It can happen. They're choosing not to do it. We have met with the parents, we have met with the kids, we have a contract on them. We even have kids that we get a contract with them 2 weeks ago, and they've already no, that contract's not because they missed 48 hours.
Jesus.
And, you know, and I've had six, appeals. And out of those six appeals, they all went back to the campus with what the art committee said, the attendance review committee said, and with me backing up that art committee. But what I did do is I did tell them, I said, congratulations, you have a summer grant.
Wow. So
the summer graduation is going to be larger than anticipated.
So summer grads, how many are you considering summer grads right now?
In August.
How many are you considering now?
Expected plus.
No, probably around, right now we have a firm 18.
Okay.
10 that we knew, and 8 that just blew their contract. And we have a very good system. I have met with the parents. The parents have been wonderful. I'm telling you, they're coming in a little bit aggravated, but once I explain the process and tell them what they did, and then it's so good to be able to say, on this date, on this date, on this date, your kid came in, signed off. You know what I mean? You come in, you signed off, and there's not much they can. Now, do I think this is going to be better next year? Absolutely. The kids have been in the practice of saying, oh, something's going to happen. We're going to make people, I don't know what they're expecting us to do, make people do what, I'm not sure. But the kids think that there is still going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, and somebody's going to say all of a sudden on June 10th, you can walk. And they're not going to be able to walk if they didn't have, you know, and these kids, the sad part is these kids have passed all of the graduation requirements.
It's better than the first number, that's for sure.
Yeah. Any questions?
47 of them have a chance of actually.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
So 18 definitely are going to make it. 47.
But 18, absolutely, we know.
It's not going to make it.
I've met with six of those 18.
And say
congratulations to your child.
Oh, you're good. Do they come back?
Because they have too much to do. They're not going to finish.
If they don't.
That's not saying we're not going to last them. If they finish, we're saying we don't think they'll be able to
stay. If they want to.
Yeah, they have to.
Now, the good news is this is going to happen next year because the attendance review committee is already in place. Like Ms. Kinnana said, it's going to have to be a continual process. So it's in place. But we had kids that had 75%. That we get 75% of the time. So we had to.
It's a pretty small class.
365, anyways. I mean, that's all the kids we have, but they have 365.
It's twice my size.
Annette, I have a question.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Ms. Patsy, are you done?
Yes.
You said you had the students, and all of them have a parent signature? All of the contracts have a parent signature? Okay. Thank you.
Now, there's a few that we didn't have parent signatures, and I asked them to, because we have some kids that are 19, some kids that are emancipated minors. So there's about 98% that have parent signatures.
Some of them because they were 18 or what?
19.
19, and then the other one was?
Emancipated minors.
Emancipated.
Yes.
What about them?
But they still live with parents, or no?
No.
The ones.
Yeah,
well, no. But I'm talking about the ones that are 19, or I'm talking about. Well, I understand that, but if my kid was 19 and he wasn't graduating, I would like to be notified. I would.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Kick him out. I know. Okay. Any questions?
But you know, what I'll check, this is also to get a little bit better. What I'll do is I will check to see if they were, to make sure that at least everyone had been attempted or phone calls were made.
Just some documentation.
Yeah, because remember in the past they would always get
letter.
A certified letter. Not a letter, a certified letter.
Certified letters already went out.
Okay, as long as you're covered, not you, but
you know what, I will double check and I'll let you know.
Well, you know what I mean, not you, but
exactly.
And remember that it was always a policy to have them certified.
Okay,
thank you, Ms. Brigham. Okay. No more questions. It was supposed to be next agenda item. I'll just announce the next agenda item. Okay, Ms. Patsy, next agenda item.
There you go.
Next agenda item, please.
Security update,
Mr.
Gonzalez.
Thank you, Ms. Brigham.
I was looking forward to this one.
Good afternoon, Ms. Gonzalez. Board. Ms. Brigham, thank you very much for allowing me to come forward and present to you an update on what security issues we have in campuses and stuff.
Yes.
If you remember, about three weeks ago, I presented turning your board here in front of the committee and made some recommendations, and I was instructed to follow through on some of the items that were listed there, and so that's what I would like to give you an update on. Starting with, we have a handout that I provided. So the first page is page number two there. Is a lockdown exercise. On there, I have on the left side is the items that were needed to be addressed, and the right side is what I have done and been addressed. There were three campuses that we had not been able to conduct lockdown exercise because they fall within the jurisdiction of the police department and not the sheriff's department. And
JD and Garcia.
Right, also got me on, and central office of Northwestern Early College. I'm still negotiating with the police department as to when we're going to be able to do that, because they are saying they don't have the proper training yet. But they still don't want the sheriff's department to do it. We're negotiating with them. And we're hopefully we can get them done in the next couple of weeks so we can have all the campuses done.
Who are you speaking to at the EPD?
I am speaking with the sergeant in charge of community service for West, at Osborne.
Osborne? The Osborne Command Center?
Yes. The name escapes me.
No worries.
Okay. And I think we're pretty close to get that done. On the next page is another common issues that were identified also, and that substitutes not locking the doors. They had to place at the high school mostly. Teachers not talking, or taking the drills very seriously, sitting on chairs, working at their desks, things like that. What I have done is I've gone back and done some specific training for the substitutes to remind them of the procedures that they've been told, that they have to keep the doors locked. I've also talked about the custodians, and I've told reminded them also to make sure that when the substitute comes in, the door is locked at all times. And so we need to be able to take care of that issue. And I also spoke with all the principals and gave some information and assistance in the proper lockdown procedures. Going on to the front office personnel and the most campuses, a lot of what the issue was there was that when the administrators were away from the campus, the front office personnel didn't know if they had authority or whether they should call a lockdown or not. We discussed that with the principals, and most of them agreed that there should be some authority given to them, to the office personnel, to call a lockdown if they see an intimate threat at that point. We also have training scheduled for August, and we're going to cover this issue again in the first meeting in August after school starts again.
Is there any sort of implementation at the front office, like a sheet or a, you know, what to do? It seems like that was came up several times in your security audit, that the front office was just clueless.
Well, I am drafting right now a standard procedure for handling the lockdown procedures as well as for our visitors' policies.
Awesome.
And that will be provided.
It was, let's say it was the head secretary, but the head secretary was out that day. And the two principals were either in one location and the other one was out, and so
you have to empower them. Yeah.
So that's why it happened. What happened?
And you have to empower whoever is it, there.
They didn't even call 911, have to
be,
though.
They have to. All of them have to be constrained.
Right. And it happened at two campuses where the administrators, and we actually were lucky on that aspect because the administrators were, one of them was here at the central office, mm-hmm. and it was a trainee.
Right.
And the counselor was also out of the office on the campus. And what happened was that the secretaries and the clerks looked at each other and went,
what do we do? We were not trained to do this. That's not my job.
It's not my job. I love that.
Don't kill me because I'm not supposed to be killed.
So we did do that training with them, and we're continuing to do that in the 1st of August. That will be my main training in the 1st of August.
Right.
We also sent out, this was good, an informational flyer to the email. This is what we spoke about just not recently, that said that Commissioner Medina asked. That's why I'm creating that point. Okay. So at the high school, these are the recommendations. This is on page 5. The recommendations from the high school specifically, the principal there had requested or had ignored the policy for locking doors and all that kind of stuff, and she was reminded of it, but no action has been taken to this point on that part. The receptions have found another room to hide in. We went over there and we specifically looked around and said, okay, this would be a better place to hide because the recommendation for the sheriff's department was that there was a window there, mm-hmm. and they could shoot through the window or whatever, or go straight wood, but the window would be much easier. We did instruct the teachers there. We had a real brief meeting with Mr. Rendon and some of the teachers and stuff, and reminded them that they needed to be sitting on the floor because if they were sitting on their chairs or tables, things like that, a straight bullet could go through those drywall very, very easily, and that's the level that they would be going at, not on the floor. So for their safety, we want them on the floor as well. And they kind of took that a little bit better. I did go to high school. I did do some training with the security officers that were there, asking them and teaching them and showing them how to look for threats rather than being proactive or reactive. I asked them to be proactive.
Yeah.
They didn't take it very well to begin with, honestly. They say like, well, we have to be inside the campus. We have to do this. We have to do that. And I gave them instructions.
Put him under him.
I went back about 4 days later. We're not doing what they were being asked to do. They were still
in
the hallways and that kind of stuff.
They were still not being compliant?
Yes, ma'am.
You need to know. I was wondering what happened because I was there last week. And the minute I walked in, it was like,
yes.
Is it me?
Maybe.
So.
And that happened when I went over there. When they see my car coming over there, then they start moving where they're supposed to be. But
can you use another car and then go through the back? And
I intend to do that.
But what I
can
do is
you walk over there.
I asked. I said, Mr. Gonzalez has been here, hasn't he? And they went, yeah. And I said, I said, you need to follow through on what he said.
Yeah.
And then I did tell Mr.
Rendon. Yeah. And they were reluctant to do what they would ask because they were more used to just staying inside.
I was just asking her the, you know how they were going to be rotated their times? Have they been?
They are rotated their times. They rotate them on, like, I don't know, every week. Every 2 weeks they rotate their times.
Like?
And somebody is supervising them?
I'm sorry?
Somebody is supervising them?
Mr. Rendon is supervising them, but they're going to move it further down. So I say that's not working very well because you have an AP with all these other duties.
Right.
Can we assign him under him? Mm-hmm. I mean, Annette, can you assign him under him?
We absolutely could do that. Because I knew something had happened. When I walked in, like I said, I knew it wasn't me.
And they need to be actively supervised.
I thought it was you that had come in.
It seems like the high school
works. This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
They're too comfortable.
They're way too intentional.
Yeah. I do think that they do need more direction and more accountability than they are getting right now. You know, and I think Mr. Dutton is doing as good a job as he possibly can. He's not trained in working with disciplinary or with security officers. If you want to sign it, Ms. Marie wants to sign it to me, I'll be happy to take it over. I am trained in security circumstances.
Cool.
And I've worked before with security.
Ms. Brigham, can you look into this and provide us a report by this Thursday?
Your recommendation.
By this Thursday, yes.
Recommendation,
we're not going to pay for this here. These are some of the other activities that I have done since the last meeting I kind of presented. I have trained the security personnel. I've not given them a training, put it that way. I provided some security training to Mr. Nindolin. I communicated with an enemy police sergeant, Mr. Gomez. Sergeant Gomez, and we're making arrangements for him to do the intruder training, the intruder assessment, basically. His time frame and my time frame haven't worked out right, but I am working with him for him to come and conduct an intruder training. The Sheriff's Department did do 3 campuses before, and I was led to believe that they had done all the campuses, mm-hmm. but then when I checked with the Sheriff's Department, they said, no, we only did 3. So we're going to work with Sergeant Gomez to do the remaining campuses.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Quintana.
When the Sheriff's Department did it, was anybody on that campus aware that they were going to come?
No.
Or was anybody in central office aware?
No.
Yeah. It was totally, nobody knew.
Nobody knew, yeah.
Did they have
cameras on there on themselves filming as they went in the building?
Yeah.
I believe that they did. Mm-hmm. And they provided us a report on
Some
it.
Did.
But the thing is that they didn't coordinate it with me, they coordinated with the principal. And they didn't tell them what time or day they were going to go, but they made the arrangements with the principal.
So eventually somebody, they knew that somebody would be coming down sometime or the other.
Yes.
You see, and I think it would be beneficial if nobody knew, nobody had any idea even where, when, how, have it be filmed. And I think as a board that it would be nice that we could see what, through the eyes of that officer.
A little GoPro camera.
See, we tried to do that with the high school. And then, not to say anything bad about the fire department. The fire department showed up and says, oh, we're here for the drill.
Well, and you know.
And so, that best laid plans of mice and men. Here's all of us over at Starbucks, all going together as a group, you know, coming in, and the fire department blew it.
You know what, and they didn't even, my sister got in the back, and she called me, and she says, hey, I heard you're having a lockdown or a month. And then I said, how do you know that? She says, the students are all telling me they've been sitting out there for almost 12 hours.
That was the police, the fire department, and the commander of the sheriff's department showed up at the high school.
So the kids figured it out way before it even happened.
Yeah. So a lot of the students, that month over the high school actually did go as pretty much as planned. You know, we were able to, the front office knew about it, like the rest of the campus did, so it worked out pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Went on with this, I'm also working with the MPISD. We develop an MOU, a memo of understanding as far as sharing facilities, things like that, in case of an emergency. And that's going to be presented to Ms. Bigham, so she'll bring it to your attention and report action.
Is there nothing with EPISD at this point?
We don't have one right now with EPISD. The only memo of understanding we have right now is with the fire department.
Right. Now, one of the things that I did get, I didn't get the procedural manual from we're just looking at the things like that, but we're trying to get some information and coordinating with, seeing what other people do about that.
Exactly. And I'm not pretty well, since I came from the SLED and I've worked with them for many, many years, you know, I've kind of shared ideas with them and they share ideas with me. And we are talking also about developing a and the EPISD. But right now we have one in the works with Anthony.
Okay.
Closest to
thank you.
Okay. Item number 6, there's coordinating with our insurance carrier. to provide security audits for us. They will do that free of charge. We just have to ask them for it. I've already told them that we'd like for them to do that. So they can come and do this, send a professional person.
Since we're not compliant, is this going to raise our...
I was going to just say that.
We are pretty much in compliance right now.
Are you?
There's $220,000 of recommendations in this book.
Mike?
Well, okay. As far as the state, as far as Tenant Building Line, is Tenant Building Line, which is the one that requires the security audits. All that it requires us to do is do an audit once every 3 years and provide information to the state. That's all the requirement says.
There's no teeth.
So we are compliant from that standpoint of compliance with the state law. But now we have a lot of deficiencies that we need to correct, you know, but that doesn't seem to mean that we're not compliant with state law.
Well,
of
course we want to be in compliance, first of all.
Right.
But...
Yeah, I'd be concerned that the insurance carrier may not interpret state law as something that they may see as something as a concern.
I don't believe that it'll raise our insurance rates as long as I'm putting words in their mouth, but I worked for 15, almost 20, not about 20 years, I guess, for insurance companies since doing the same thing. I was a safety rep, and I did the assessments and all that kind of stuff. That's not one of the type of things that we, at that time, that we would say we raise the rates. What we would do is make recommendations at that point, and if they didn't comply with those recommendations or didn't have a good reason for it, then we would either non-renew them or we would raise the rates. Okay, so having an insurance company come out and do the assessment would not raise a rate unless they would found something very, very...
And we didn't comply with it.
I think most of the things that they'll find is we can really comply with most of the stuff that they would want.
I'm just concerned with the current climate of school safety and security that they may not have already revised their sort of, you know, procedures.
Mm-hmm. I personally don't think that would be an issue now.
Okay.
Okay, but if you don't want me to do it, I would be happy to tell them not to do it. It's a free service.
Thing.
I'm almost guarantee you that it will not raise our rates. You know, now, non-compliance may raise our rates.
Of course.
The audit itself will not.
Well, it's not my call. It's the board's call. How does the rest of the committee feel about this?
A lot of the recommendations that you have included in your handout, pretty high dollar stuff.
Yeah. He details them in this big one.
Right.
Yeah. Which, by the way, thank you. It's awesome.
A lot of the recommendations here are really high dollar. I put them out there because being a certified safety professional, I'd be negligent in my duty to say this doesn't exist. Does it not mean that we have to comply with all of them? Not mean that we have to do them all in one day? We can say, okay, let's prioritize and go through these, go down to them. Okay. There's this part right here, we can go to the recommendations. But currently I'm updating the EOP, which is an annual process, including all of the stuff that we've done in the past, the stuff that we do, our plans going forward. Also, I'm also updating our continuity plan about continuity operations plan, which is basically if for some reason this building no longer existed, or what would we do? Or if the campus didn't exist, what would we do? You know, like a big fire or something like that, or a flood. This is a continuity of operations plan, basically says this is what we should do, and this is what we should do. One thing that I did not put on here because I just got word of it is item number 9, it's not on your thing, but it's I got an update on House Bill 1009, which is the state. It went to the Senate. It's a House bill which says it's for the school margins. And it's entitled Protection of Texas Children's Act. But that's basically the Senate. It's gone to the Senate. It was already approved by the House, the State House, and it's gone to the Senate for approval. And they think it's going to pass pretty much.
Hit the guns and all that, or
what it entails is,
like
is
air marshals.
The school board will have the opportunity, but the school board will have to say yes or no, definitely. they have the opportunity to have a school marshal. One.
I would love a school marshal.
For every 400 students.
Oh.
You know, so that's what you can do. Now, the part of the bill also says that if it is a, if you are designated prior to the school marshal to have a gun, if it's someone that is in constant contact with the children, like a teacher, then there's a lot of rules they have to follow. Like it has to be locked, it can't be loaded, you know, different things like that. But you can designate someone else that is not in constant contact with the students to be the marshal. And when you decide that, you do assign someone, that person has to maintain the confidentiality of who that person is, has to be maintained. In other words, you and the board, the person will be the one who's knowing who it is.
It's like an air marshal for schools.
Yes.
Sort of a private security no one knows about.
Right. But it will be your choice. The bill has not passed yet to the Senate.
I think those employees need to go through a psychological screening too. What if they go postal or something?
Well, that's part of the
postal.
Yeah, that's a part of the bill. If the person that the you heck? Decide to accept the fire marshal or school marshal, then they have to go through it's 40-hour training within by the commissioners, and basically going to be a unsanctioned peace officer without the right to, they do not have the authority to make arrests or things like that, but they will have the authority to carry a gun.
Is that state bill or the House bill that's now in the Senate, does it call for state funding or is it all locally funded?
What it calls for is state funding, but from the standpoint of the training.
So we...
Not personnel.
Not the personnel. Personnel would be an employee of the
unfunded,
district.
Unfunded mandate.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was looking for.
That's what you're looking for, right?
Gotta use the right words, like
there
arc.
There you go.
Mr. Gonzalez, your page 9 or page 45. One of your recommendations is to redo the key-in system on all campuses.
Mm-hmm.
We recently had it done. We paid lots of dollars for that.
Yes, and what happened was that the key system that they went to is a very, very expensive one to begin with.
Exactly.
And they don't, you can't, you have to send the keys out.
I know what that system does and doesn't do.
Right.
And why didn't you speak up then?
Because that wasn't part of the...
But why didn't you speak up then when it was being done?
I didn't know that it was being done until after the fact. Otherwise, I would have spoken. One of my jobs in the past, when I was working with the director of security and safety at Bonnet International, is I went to a locksmith school. And
I used to make keys.
Yes. And I was very familiar with locks and everything else, and locking systems, mechanisms, and all that. And Mr. Armendariz did not see my advice, but that
he's no longer here. He didn't care.
The reason I'm asking for that or saying that we might want to do this, like I said, we can prioritize these, is because right now what we have is like at the high school, you have to have 5 different keys to get to everything in the high school.
Well, this is a high school. Look at district wide.
Right, and also at elementary school, we have 2 sets of keys. 2 different types of keys.
Are you recommending one key for the entire district?
I'm recommending a keying system, which you have grandmasters, masters, submasters, and even submasters, and then individual ones. That way, you have one type of key that maybe is bigger or superintendent.
Like a fireman's key.
But then you go around the entire district.
Sort of like a fireman's key.
Right.
Yeah, and there's no such key.
There's no such key.
No such key.
Can our current keying system, configure it, allow us to do that? Without
the current system that we have right now, we could.
Yeah, I think so.
It could.
There
you go. We do have a grandmaster on this system.
Yeah, the new locks that we bought would not lend itself to it.
No.
The older ones that we have.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And we still have some of the old locks.
How much was it?
They were supposed to be replaced.
Yes.
And they never did, and we paid money for that too.
How much was
exactly.
it?
Martha Aguirre, can you provide us since we're in the asking business, please provide us. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Please provide us. I know you need to look back in your records. Please provide us information as to how much we paid for those that lock system. I know you have all the time in the world, so.
I think it's worse.
And we're not in immediate need of this, but just to. I know we paid.
The one like recently, like.
No, district wide. I know.
In the last like 3-4 years.
Yes, crazy books that we paid.
$100,000.
I agree, but there needs to be a strategy.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And I will invite you to, Ms. Brigham has seen this already, but I don't invite you to go. Take you and drive you to his
well, I thought you were going to schedule this. What happened?
Yeah. I remember that.
I've worked with it very, very much. I can do it.
Okay, schedule it and then you
please, I'd love to go
set
see
it up for us.
Okay, I'll do that.
Make this a joint effort and let's call it a meeting or something so we can go and we'll go.
On that note, and this may be a little off topic, are you on the security RFP committee?
I'm going to be tomorrow, yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure that our security guy is involved in the decision making of this company.
Yeah,
company.
I'm not involved in the drawing up of the RFP or anything else, but I will be involved in this, the assessment.
You weren't asked to take part in the RFP?
Okay. Ms. Rachel.
Okay. On page 8.
Page
44 already. Hire CISB security guards with 2 retired ones. I would like to see.
Make better use.
The security guards we have now.
Get out of the high school.
And to work in that vision. See how that works out.
Yes. The biggest recommendation that I have here is that is a recommendation that I'm making so that we can enhance our security force throughout the entire district. And in this book that Mr. Dina brought up earlier, I outlined a very good plan for having security guards. A division, building up a division of security officers. The two police officers retired because that allows 2 things. Number one, if they're already commissioned police officers, they still retain the power to arrest, make an arrest. But it's happening, especially at the high school, is when they suspect a child of doing something or drugs or something like that, they can only detain them and wait for El Paso PD to show up. Sometimes that's 2 or 3, 4 hours. And they're the ones that make the arrest. If we have someone on board that is a commissioned police officer, retired, then they still maintain that right to make the arrest. And they also have maintained the right to carry a weapon on campus.
I thought they only had to be a commissioned peace officer.
Yes, ma'am. This is what I'm saying is that retired, I'm saying, I'm suggesting to make we hire 2
okay,
retired.
Because we have, because I know we have, a peace officer on the campus that happens to be a teacher also.
She's a constable?
Yes,
that's correct.
Yes.
So
we'd be afraid of her.
So we don't need, if we make better use of the security guards at the high school, we can probably, if they do what they need to do.
That only covers the high school.
Well, but do we need it there full time? I mean, it's something that.
The recommendation that I'm making on this big book and everything else is that we can piecemeal that and make it a little bit different, but to have a very, very efficient police force, what I was recommending is having 1 at every elementary school, 2 at each of the middle schools, 4 at the high school, 3 here at central office, and then the direct department. And 1 at central office be a sanctioned police officer, and 1 at the high school be a commissioned police officer. And that way, and their shifts are kind of shifted, so once during the day, once at night, so you have coverage all day long. And if we do nothing else today or tomorrow or whenever, in the near, very near future, I would recommend that we hire at least one more security officer for the high school for the night shift or evening shift to help out with games, all that kind of stuff. Right now, we have no coverage. We have to hire security officers and all that kind of stuff. So we hired one on our own, especially for the evening. They could come in like at 4, 3, 2 o'clock, whatever, and be there for the games, basically.
I have a question for administration.
If you want to cover the full fledged thing, it would be better to create another division, and then that way the security officers are supervised much closer, and you have a full fledged.
I do have a question for Ms. Brigham. When do you expect the RFP to be awarded or be brought forward to the board?
I think it's being opened this week.
It will be reviewed tomorrow. So by our board meeting on the 24th or 23rd,
I believe that it's on the schedule for tomorrow's board meeting.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but that's right. And then it will go to the board.
To the full board?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, only because you've done such great work to have this other company come in and sort of make these recommendations as well is really what was the purpose of that RFP. It's kind of sad that you weren't included in the RFP process, but luckily you're on the review side because we will lean on you to kind of give us that guidance here because you are our staff. I just think having surveillance cameras on all campuses, one, I'm all for it, but is that the right way to allocate our resources at this time, or is it the perimeter fences around the new high school, around the high school, because of all the building around it? So I think there's levels here, but I do agree about the cameras.
I just wanted to remind you all, and I'm not sure what Ms. Matthews has planned for, but I don't know what dollar amount he's provided, but there is $200,000 that is in the 2006 bond funds that still has not been used at all. And that was earmarked for surveillance cameras.
And we put a hold on that, I believe. We did put a hold on that.
And I'm going to make a comment to that effect. I've been approached that we have cameras at central office, and the kids are more important. Why not?
The cameras we have at central office are $200.
Yeah.
Well, devices. Well, and it's understandable. But do you see? They don't know that. They don't know that it's $200.
And the reason we did that is because our vehicle was being vandalized, and the building was being vandalized regularly. When there were coming over across, we were throwing rocks across, like that, and that's why we would put some surveillance cameras up. And so we bought them from Sam's, and we put them up. It's less than $400 for the whole system. It was not a big expenditure in the district.
Well, and like Martha Aguirre, did you were going to say something, Martha?
Well, I was going to say that the cameras that were purchased were with the HR budget and the warehouse budget.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's still district money. And what I'm saying is that you mentioned that $200,000 that are available, it needs to be used, especially that they were set aside for that purpose. And thank you, Martha, for reminding us on that. And we need to look into that. I mean, I know you have a wish list.
Yes.
And we're here to grant some of those wishes.
Right, and appreciate that. And I am working with Tony Torres for the IT department. He's looking into getting us a good quote right now for surveillance cameras. And that can be tied into the
district-wide
internet system for us.
Mm-hmm. I do want to mention that I've had the opportunity, Mike took me down to Isleta ISD, and they have a very impressive system. And I don't know if Mike mentioned it, but I know that if any of you are interested in seeing that setup, a meeting can be arranged or a tour so that you can see that security.
If you could also arrange one or two districts, not only Isleta.
I'd like to see PISD because they have the police force. In effect, I don't think YISD has a police force.
No, YISD is a security officer, but their chief is a commissioned police officer.
Yeah, only because we're looking at both options, you know, full police force, or do we just go the surveillance route?
Yeah,
or,
you know. I would
not. I will be meeting this Friday with the chief of police from EPISD and the police chief from Socorro ISD.
Great.
We'll meet this Friday morning.
Okay, Ms. Patsy.
Do we need action on this?
I think we provided some guidance personally. Thank Martha Aguirre for reminding us on that $200,000. I guess that's a start. Mr. Gonzalez.
Last time that we really need to think about it, maybe tomorrow's meeting or later on in the month, is we have to answer to the state as to whether or not we're going to allow and acquire guns on campus, basically.
But is that going to be a policy?
That's not even in the law yet.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying. It hasn't been approved, huh?
No, but I'm saying is our insurance carrier, because of the liability issues, they're asking us to whether or not, just, it doesn't matter who they say.
Are we going to allow guns on campus?
Yes, they just want to be prepared one way or the other.
Would it be possible if and when that does happen, or? Would it be possible to find out what our neighboring school districts are doing?
Yes, just survey them.
And right now, because Socorro and EPISD have a police force, they don't need to have any other burner guns on campus.
But what about Clint? What about those surrounding districts that don't have it? Can you bring us that information so we can compare and...
Yes, that works.
Okay.
Also, could I say that you have a list here, the 220,000? You were talking about prioritizing, and you've kind of already done that. If you could just do that same with that page and just give us a priority, number one through whatever, just because that gives us a little bit more idea as to how to spend that $200,000 that we're supposed to spend on security cameras.
Martha, I get it. The $200,000, if those are in the 2006 bond. If he has let's say he has a list, and if he prioritizes, can we go back and amend that, or does it have to be, because that's how we went out to the voters.
The bond said it was for building improvements and upgrades, so I would think that it have to be, I'm not sure what listing that, you know, what list of things you have, but it would have to be tied somehow.
Well, a lot of it is perimeter fencing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Security, cameras, I mean... It's all for
Can you get together with Martha and then?
Yes, I will.
That's a great list, by the way. I mean, $220,000, which is very close to that $200,000 that we have available to us, so we can just reallocate that.
Get together and.
I'll confirm it with a financial advisor.
Right. Check his compare his list. Check his list and then see if it's feasible, and then we can see if we can move forward with that.
I'll do that for the week.
Is there any other items that we need to address, or?
No, that's what we're pertinent right now, and thank you very much.
I mean, thank you again.
Thank
I mean,
you.
Mr. Gonzalez, and I'm impressed that you know all about locks, that you went to a locksmith.
A locksmith.
Wow.
Question is, are they Schlag or not?
Yes. Thank you, and.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez.
I don't know if you need to be looking at each RFP, RFQ, and I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to work with
Jennifer
Matthews on some of the safety issues and stuff, especially because new campus is coming on, and trying to get everything.
I know there's so many issues that need to be addressed that are already like after the fact, and how do we move forward? Yeah, I mean, we need to move forward.
It costs more to do.
I know. And then how do we tell the taxpayers, like, oops? Those people are no longer here. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. Thank you.
Next agenda item, please.
Want me to read it?
Please. Miss Carlos.
Sorry, Carlos. Right. Stepping on your toes.
Item 2E, food services updated surveys. Miss Salcedo.
We're having fun. We have.
I know it.
Thank you very
much. We are going to be here at 7:30. But Martha talks too much.
Oh, yeah. Does Martha talk too much?
Good evening. On tonight's agenda, there's an item or a request for an item on an update under the Food Services Division or Department as to the communication that has been made out to our students and parents in regards to meal satisfaction and suggestions for improvement in the meal program. And I'm going to go ahead and let Ms. Salcedo kind of, she has a couple of slides to show you. She has conducted a survey, but I'll let her explain and then have some dialogue after that.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, board members. Ms. Brenna. Today's update is the survey that was conducted. I took advantage of the parent-teacher conferences, and we put up a display of nutritional items, and then we went ahead and put out, food items that we could give out to the community so they could test the quality of the food that we provide the schools. So we also have some samples of cookies and milk. Anyways, it went very well. It went very well in the fact that we had a lot of parents coming in with the children, and we passed out the surveys. The main objective to this breakfast survey is because I've been tracking down part of the package that I provided you right now was a report that you see on this card.
Your Thursday packet had a this information.
Yeah, it had that information, but I didn't have this available because of the lateness putting this together. But what I've been tracking since the start of the school year.
My late minute request.
Excuse me?
My late minute request.
So, I have this available. What I've been doing is tracking down participation to give me information of what kind of participation that we're having in the schools. And it's very valuable because it tells us where we're doing good and where we're not doing good. What I found was that our breakfast participation was a lot lower than our lunch. So so this survey, it was like to determine reasons why students are not eating breakfast at the school. What we found was that, it was five schools that were surveyed, CMS, JD, GE, Devonport, and the Northwest Early College. 239 surveys were collected. Only 239. And we were approaching, parents, but sometimes they, either they didn't come to the health fair, they just went to the conference with the teachers, or we just didn't have a lot of participation. And I don't know what kind of participation the school has. But in any case, this is representative of some, the student population. The first question was, how many students eat? And what we found was 70% of students do eat breakfast at school, which is indicative of my report. It actually shows around that area, a little below 70%. And question two is, okay, now, if you're not eating breakfast at school, then what's the reason for not eating breakfast? And the highest percentage was the students prefer to play during breakfast. They get off the buses and they go out and play. That was the highest percentage. The next one was they're eating at home. And then the other one was due to parent schedule. And when I was asking the cafeteria managers what's going on at the school, a lot of them said that, the parents that drop off the children, drop them off right before the bell is going to ring. That's a small percentage, 10%. Then next, we asked specific questions about food. What do you like? And we listed all the food items, and I'm not going to go over them, but we did ask them, do you like egg items, bean items, yogurt, breakfast, and what do you like in whole cereals, pancake items, waffles, biscuits. So we asked them all these questions, and what we found is that 46% like all breakfast choices item. Because you're going to get different, you know, different likes from the students. The sixth question was cafeteria service, and that's really important to us that they're satisfied with the service that we're providing. And one of the things that I found in the first question was that it had nothing to do with cafeteria schedule, and that was important. Not that we schedule the breakfast, it's administration that schedules what time breakfast comes in, but I thought maybe that's a factor, and maybe we can talk to administration about schedule, but that was not a factor. The service, 62% of all service collected said that they are satisfied with the service, and 2% not satisfied, and then 1% no opinion. Like I said, this was kind of like a manual kind of survey. I don't know if you can see. So, you know, the data is not as accurate as we would like it to be. We would prefer to have some technology, but I don't have those resources right now to put it into SurveyMonkey and ask more specific questions in them, and that the survey gets the answers for us. You know, we did it manually. It was 239, so we did it manually. To say that we did, and I know I presented this during my presentation to the board, that we were drafting different surveys. We drafted different surveys to see where it was going to go. But this initial survey kind of gave us an indication that we need to go technical. I really believe that. So that way we can get more accurate information.
Ms. Patsy, Ms. Patsy has a question.
I'm sorry. I know that we do a survey at the end of the year with the students. That includes a lot of the items that you were maybe not concentrating on breakfast, but certainly over the overall presentation of the food, and I know that that goes out at the end of the year. Are we planning on doing that this year?
I know in cabinet we have discussed it. It's done through school resources. There's a couple of questions there, and that was my understanding that we would have that student survey. The Thursday packet that you received also had some questions on a more specific food service survey. I had been chatting with Ms. Acedo last week and said, you know, we need to meet with Tony because, of course, we need the guidance from school resources to actually enter an electronic survey and then strategize on how we're going to actually launch that out. But I definitely need
technology. I know that Mr. Coronado was passionate about including, in particular, how the students felt. The end of the year survey, Ms. Brigham, are we doing that again, and can we include the items that Ms. Salcedo?
Absolutely. Of course. Did you get a chance to review the lunch?
Yes. I did.
Any suggestions?
Well, I noticed, like she said, there's only 239 students. I know that more students attend, especially at the elementary campus, there's more students that attend. That's not my point. My point is, and Ms. Brigham, do they usually take the survey online? Is it feasible for them to do that? What service do you use for the surveys?
The survey monkey.
Because I would like for all students. For all students to get that survey?
I think what we did last year is we did it the last week of school, so that would be like June, like beginning of June.
Well, no.
We can begin the coordination and just to make sure that we have all the details.
What we do is we have the kids go. We did have it online.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's instantaneous.
Because even during Mr. Coronado mentioned that even when we had the candidates, superintendent's candidates, some of the students mentioned the food too. So it is a concern, and we're it's a concern that we want to address and see how the students feel about it at all levels per campus, and not only the food. I know that survey includes many other questions.
Safety.
safety.
Exactly. Ms. Rachel?
On the Survey Monkey, can that be emailed to each and every student, staff member, and even parents if we have any?
Well, the only, well, we, it can. If you want it to be what they did last year, I do believe what they did is they had the kids go. Yeah, it went to every email account, absolutely, but what they did is they provide the vehicle to get it done, is they brought them into a lab. We can send it out, and that doesn't mean every kid's going
to
sign.
No.
So that's why we had, like,
no.
Yeah, we had, what, over 2,000 kids respond last year, but that's because that was.
Yeah. And
some kids are concerned about what they are fed.
Well, I think the elementary kids will be fine.
Well, yes and no. I mean, depending on what guidance you give them when you read the question, how you interpret it.
Well, I think what we only did, if you recall, third grade up.
Right.
Is that the way the same grade levels you want to address? Well, I don't know about the.
Well, and it's true that the little ones might not.
No, if you want it right, yeah. Because I mean.
Do we
want to
do secondary?
Middle,
like 6 through 12?
Mm.
Or 3rd through 12?
Let's try the 3rd through 12. Please.
With the staff members?
We can. Yeah, the staff members were addressed to. Remember that, Martha, that last year the staff members were addressed to?
And parents, and we have email addresses on the parents.
Is that doable again?
EPISD does.
My mind did it, but
technology-wise,
I don't know.
I don't know about here, but EPISD puts a survey online and says you can. This is how you can go to that. I don't know if it's doable here.
Do it, but what I'm saying is, I know last year it was absolutely the kids who brought in. You know what I mean? Because if you want. Put it on and it will get some. But I mean, I think we put the superintendent survey, and I think we got 100.
So we're wanting everybody.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It depends what you want. I mean, at this juncture, it would have to be put online, put in, and then have the kids go and sign up and do it at school.
What is the objective of this survey besides, the service, the quality of the food?
Well, we want to hear the concerns so we can, if there's something that needs to be addressed, so that it can be addressed.
And the questions here, were they mainly about food taste in food?
Taste, serving size?
That's one of them. Well, I understand that, but there's no seconds.
Seconds. The only ones we allow with the dietary specifications with the new regulation states that we have to meet calorie ranges. And the meals are designed to have their calorie ranges for that time. As far as seconds, there's only one meal per child. You cannot provide a second meal, and that's just part of the regulation. There are free meals, and we don't get reimbursed for any second meal.
Well, and I understand that. I understand what you're saying, but my concern is that a lot of these kids, this is the only meal they're fed, or this is the best meal they get throughout the day. And some of them, when they see it, is like, they either don't like it or make faces. And if you go stand in the cafeteria and you see it being tossed, what is that message you're getting?
Well, the message, and it can be interpreted in different ways. First of all, children, depending on their age, they're learning how to eat, And then, second of all, they have preferences. And currently we're providing at least two vegetables. We can only provide one entree, well, except for the high school. In the high school, we've developed three menu items, three lines with three different menus. And every line has a two options for vegetables and two options for fruit, because the portion size can increase to 1 cup, from 1/2 cup to 1 cup. So we're providing two choices of fruit, two choices of vegetable, and three choices of entrees.
No. So oh, you just meant, I understand what you're saying. You mentioned the high school. And that's fine, because you don't have, the other campuses don't have that option.
No. And what I'm putting together for this following year is having optional menus, not only for breakfast, but for lunch. And the reason why this year, in coming in new to the district, the new regulations, and I had to analyze all these menus, it was hard for me to kind of plug in other menus and find that I was trying to find a balance with the new regulations. But this year, now that I've learned the system of how to input it to balance the menus, the different types of menus, some have high calories, some have lower calories. So you balance the menus throughout the week. And so this year, what I'm implementing is having optional menus. And like for breakfast, we're having like five different optional menus. Some of them are pre-prepared and some of them are packaged. And then for lunch, we're going to have a sandwich line open and a salad line for the children to option to the main menu.
And this is at what level?
At all levels.
Okay. Do you ever, have you, and I'm not telling you what to do because you're the expert here, have you considered setting up a committee of composed of kids, consisting of kids, and they'll tell you what they want, and you see if it meets your specifications? That, not your specification, but the guidelines?
The guidelines, exactly. And actually, Martha has been asking me all year to put together a committee. However, because of all the things that I had to address with the new regulations and coming into a new position, it was really hard for me to put together other things or additional things. But we're already putting together a committee. We have invited committee members. We contacted the parent liaisons so that they can contact us with parents in their schools, and they can bring the parents. So we're putting it together. As a matter of fact, we're having a meeting this Wednesday in my office at 3:00.
Well, but these are not the parents, these are the kids. The parents don't get to eat the food, it's the kids. That's why I want the kids to voice their opinions, to voice what they like and don't like. And I want you to see the results. I want to see the results.
And we can do that.
We're going to see the results. It might be very positive.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Ms. Brigham.
One of the things we could do, too, is the career ed kiddos and the culinary arts. I mean, I think that would be a good avenue for them.
I did approach the culinary arts, Mr. Simpson. I did approach him and asked him if he would like to participate. And he said yes, but he never got back with me.
And also Ms. Mindy Castillo.
Well, I mean, it's something internal that they need to.
I just think because some of the kids, we have the kids on FCCLA, and I just think that that might be a good idea. And they're kids that belong to a student organization, and they go and they compete. And so I just want to say it could be, I just think that would be something that the kids.
And it might not be an issue at the high school because they have so many menus. Middle school, mm-hmm. Elementary.
I'm thinking that maybe just, you know, as we're sitting here discussing, it would be very likely that we've got two middle schools. If we contacted both principals and asked them to give us five students.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can put, you know, select them. We obviously we don't.
Randomly or whatever.
And just have a very informal meeting with them. And basically maybe just have them either through these questions, but just a discussion to see if we can get some information at the middle school level. That way we could maybe use the CTE students, as Ms. Bergen suggested, at the high school level. We would talk to Northwest and maybe have them kind of like the informal type of situation and see what we can do. Of course, we have to either keep them at their school. We'd have to strategize to see the logistics of of the actual meeting.
So well, but it's not going to be like a meeting like every week or every week. Right. So it's not.
So just get the feel for each principal and see what the best time would be for them to for us to do that.
I think what we could even do is, Ms. Elzico, I'm just saying, one of the things that we could absolutely do is we could arrange for you to come into the culinary arts for the kids. You know, because especially, you know, I mean, high school kids, they will. And these are kids that understand food preparation, that understand quantity, that understand following the recipe. I just think it would give a different perspective also.
Right, right.
And it would get them, you know.
I think that's a really good idea, but I still would want the...
Oh, still do with a survey. With a survey.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, definitely.
No, I mean, so this the kids participate in the food. Yeah.
And these are some of the questions that we want. It's not all about cafeteria, okay? Please understand that. Because you need to see the survey. Don't think that we're focusing on cafeteria. You need to see the survey that we had last year. It even includes board members.
Okay.
Yes. It includes board members. It includes administrators. It includes principals. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think
to put a portion for food services.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying.
But not as detailed as I have drafted. We have drafted. Probably not.
Well, and we might include, yeah, we might include some of those questions in there.
Well, we'll look at these questions and then determine which are kind of more all-encompassing the food service.
Yes.
And then we're going to use these for the students that we bring in.
Because this, this information that you provided is only 239 students.
Right.
And I know that when there is a... parent-teacher conference, and especially at an elementary, there's 239 minimum students.
I involved, you know, Gonzalez, I involved the cafeteria managers and some staff members.
Well, I saw the picture. I see them. Oh, no, I know your cafeteria people are very dedicated. I know that. I know that without a doubt. But that's our focus. That's our interest, and we go through this every year. And I would like some of those questions, Martha, to be included in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like for those...
what I did, Martha, is we could meet possibly tomorrow. I just texted Gustavo, because I think he has a survey.
And one of the other things that Mr. Coronado... And I don't know, Patsy, Rachel, do you have any more questions?
I have one, but I'll...
And one of the questions that Mr. Coronado, I thought he was going to be here... And I don't know if he addressed this with you, Martha, already, about buying locally, what we can do.
As far as food purchases?
Yes. Well, do you know anything about it, Patsy? About Sergio buying, that he wanted to know how we can... what do you know in it?
Okay. School-wise, the new content management system that we just brought in, there was some training last week. Mr. Monteveros was part of it. Part of that is we can, for time right now, we're going to use the old survey and tweak it. But with the new content management system, is they can, one of the things is they can do surveys right there on the system, you know, that they can make it up and it can be sent, like you were just saying, Patsy and Sandra, so that it would go up and then they can create a button for it for them to do the survey. Do you know what I mean? So we now have a vehicle, but we're just going through the training as far as, so I think this will become a moot issue that, I mean, a much more robust issue that it can be happening much more timeliness, and we can do it immediately. And that's on the new system that they just put in on the school wires. So that's a big improvement.
Okay.
Regarding Mr. Coronado's request, what was it exactly?
If we could buy Patsy, fresh produce, exactly, like from farmers.
Locally here in the area?
Yes,
yeah.
I think you addressed that the last time, or maybe about 2-3 months ago, and he touched the subject briefly.
I don't know.
But I do know that here in Texas we have what we call a farm-to-school.
Uh-huh.
And what that is saying that the state of Texas contracts local farmers, and they buy, because we buy DOD, Department of Defense,
uh-huh.
We buy all our fruit and vegetables, all our produce through them.
what they buy is from local farmers, but in Texas. They don't go outside Texas, in Texas. So it can be, you know, the area the farmer has enough supply to supply the school districts. So our volumes are huge.
Right.
You know, 6,000 students. I mean, El Paso ISD, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when we do our commodity ordering, we have to kind of piggyback on what EPISD is using, because when the trucks come in, it's whatever they're using that we can buy.
Right, right.
Because we don't have a choice of making our own
choices. Right, right. Well, Martha, maybe you want to follow up with Mr. Corona on this, please? So, anyway, okay, any more questions? Ms. Patsy?
I have one question. Ms. Patsy, you've had a year now with us, right? About a year. I am concerned about Berkeley College and the cafeteria that they have, and I know we're building a new one, but do you feel that we're doing the very best we can for our students out there?
Oh, as far as providing the meal service, you know, we have very good staff. Just like Ms. Gonzalez says, we have very dedicated staff. As a matter of fact, the reason why they were upset all this year was because of the menu, is because they want to provide more for the students. They want to provide a better service, more meal items, more, you know, the larger portion sizes. And that's what upsets. But if you go out there, the only thing that the meal service is great, and they have refrigeration, they have their serving units. It's the dining area.
Right.
It's really small, and how they have to line up, they don't have any coverage, you know, for lining up. Of what I understand, they're going to start the process of building this summer.
Do you give them, I know it's impossible, but do you give them options like you give the kids at the high school?
No. And the reason for that is because we have to transport, we prepare the food items at the high school, and we have to transport them, and we have to put them in hot and cold units to keep the temperatures in compliance with sanitation. So that's a little hard.
So, since you're, I'm sorry, Patsy, continue. Excuse for interrupting, I'm sorry.
That's the same process we're going to be using when we provide meal service at Westway.
Yes,
we're going to have
remember you said
package
that.
Up the meals in hot and cold units, and then transport them in the truck.
And we're going to provide those services at the
Yes.
Thank you.
We can hope that the construction goes as planned and as fast as it can be, so that we can finally give them that service that we've waited so long to get it going for them.
And when I read the survey for that campus, it was all satisfactory. And it's, you know, the percentage of participation is high.
You wonder.
The breakfast is lower because they're transporting students to different locations, and then some of them come later, and you know, so but
they have the college schedule too. So
right. But the cafeteria manager was telling me the other day that she has students that come to her and say they already have a schedule with her. You know, like I'm a student that goes to college during the morning, and I'll be in a little later, and she packages them up a lunch to make sure they eat his lunch for the day.
The
service is there.
Thank you.
Yes,
sir, I have a question. Since you mentioned that you transport the food from the high school, you haven't considered providing, since there's three different servings or three different, three different serving lines, but is it three different menus? Okay. Have you considered providing and adding another menu to the early college?
You know, I didn't address it this year.
What would that entail?
It's, well, again, the packaging.
It's the same. I mean, I'm just saying, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I did give the cafeteria manager an option to, if she picks this week's menu, because we have to do analysis for a week's menu, that she has to stay with that week menu. But if she ever wants to change an optional menu, she could. However, One of the factors that's happening right there is storage. Storage, because there's two schools storing in the same area, refrigeration, dry storage, and well, both refrigeration, freezer and the walk-in refrigerator. So for her to separate, the separating of items from what the high school is serving and what the community, early college is doing, is real, it's just hard for them to manage all the groceries and separating them.
But what about serving, this, like if the high school has three menus, serving two of the menus, that way it's the same amount of, it's the same type of food, just in larger amounts to transfer. Is that possible?
But the only thing is that we only have one serving line because of space in Northwest College. Because once we prepare it, we have to transport it, and they have somewhere to serve it and hold it, hold the temperatures, whether it's a hot item or a cold. Mm. Yeah. So maybe research it more and see. Maybe we can
maybe hold items.
Yeah, cold item, because I know they have refrigeration. However, they're transporting their fruit because they do have a three compartment sink. I'm actually impressed of how they set it up. You know, they do have a three compartment sink in the area to where maybe we could do that.
Yeah.
I can certainly address it for next year.
Okay.
Provide that optional menu.
All right. I guess no more questions.
Keep you updated on
please.
The committees and the surveys and
please.
Yes.
Please. Because this doesn't go away.
No. Thank you.
Sometimes yes.
Meetings like this open your mind.
Yes, this doesn't go away. Okay. Thank you. Next agenda item, please. What? No, there's no action. It's just information.
Item D, extension of third-party administrative services agreement for cafeteria section 125 plan with Texas Educator Benefits Group, Inc. Mr. Carmona, Ms. Carrasco.
Oh, hold on.
Sorry.
Oh. Hold on. It's in the next agenda item. No, hold on. Number four.
I'm sorry.
Carlos, read agenda. It's in agenda item number four. The next one.
F.
Adjournment.
No? Oh.
Go ahead, Martha.
This one will be really quick.
Under pressure.
Yeah. There was a request to bring forward or review the process as in which how we handle per diem for student travel. So what I've done is I've provided...
Who asked you that?
The board member.
Why didn't you bring the rest of the staff? The rest of the staff as a whole... Say, go ahead.
Okay. So regulation FMG relates to student travel. And so what I'll do is I'll just note, basically currently the process has been that all student receipts must be turned in after every travel. Well, as you can imagine, some travel, some of our groups can go 20, 30 students at one time to a specific place for a two-day stay times three meals. You know, we were talking tons of receipts.
It's a different thing. Sorry.
This is a guideline that had been in place prior to even my arrival to the district. And one of the reasons that I believe that was in place is that we need to ensure that our students receive their per diem allocation for their meals. What the process is right now is the sponsor in charge receives many a time a $2,000 check that they go cash and then they have to divvy up to the kids. And by us requiring that they bring back the receipts, we ensure that the students ate and that they didn't just splurge on goodies and then didn't eat. Or, you know, even on the worst case scenario, which we haven't experienced, thank the Lord, is where, you know, funds are misappropriated and not provided to the students. And so the suggestion was made to look into how we're handling these items. We did contact other school districts to see what their current practice is. And so if you go to page 3, you will find items in blue that are in the blue on the section under meal receipt. And
basically what I'm proposing, and I did present to cabinet this afternoon, and there is one minor addition that I will do, but basically students in grade level 1 through 8 will still be required, sponsors will still be required to return meal receipts after their travel. That's because these are little ones that perhaps may not be able to fend for themselves and be able to just, hey, wait a minute, you're entitled, I'm entitled to food, you know, where's my money? And so that's the kind of, that's where we're thinking that we need more assistance and guidance for those little ones. Students in grade levels 9 through 12, moving forward with the next school year, we will not require that the sponsor bring back all receipts for everything that they ate. Instead, what we are requesting is there is a form attached to the document, and it's the student per diem mission log. It was already in place so that the sponsors could have proof that they gave the money out to the students, that they had already issued it. But in this case now, that it'll be required that it's filled, and that's what's returned with a travel report. Not 100, you know, little receipts from McDonald's and Pizza Hut and everywhere that they go.
And this was for what grade level?
9 through 12. Now, the only difference, and that it's not noted there, but I will be modifying, is the UIL. There is UIL guideline requirements that if they're athletic trips, we do need to get those receipts. And then basically, you know, there's a lot of rules just to ensure that our athletes are treated.
Who requires those?
UIL.
Although it's local funds?
Yes. Yes. But then they're not paid. They're not paid.
He was a bearer of bad news.
No, he was what?
The bearer of bad news. I'm sure the coaches would have loved to know that they didn't have to bring receipts, but...
Okay.
There's UIL guidelines that we have to follow, and these apply to the UIL sanctioned events like athletics and some music, academics. And the requirement is that these students do not receive payments or donations, gifts directly, and that is in compliance with the amateur rule. So we want to stay away from violating that amateur rule, and so that's why we're recommending that we'll continue with the receipt process for that recipient.
And so that will be also outlined in the red. As well as if you notice, it says federally funded meal receipts. Well, that won't change. We will still require that we get meal receipts for those students.
Where are you putting UIL?
It'll be under, just like I have the federal funding, I will put another section for UIL.
Okay, because I wanted to.
Right. And what I can do is, once it's done and it's approved by cabinet next Monday, I'll put it in the Thursday packet for your review, and if there's any other questions.
Oh, it's a regulation.
It's a regulation, yes. It's not a policy.
Okay.
And so, basically, that's the meat and potatoes of the changes to this regulation at this point. Like I said, it was just brought forward because, again, yeah, there are many groups that travel quite a bit, and I'm going to say a lot of our CTE, you know, and as they compete in advance, you know, it's a large, it's a big process for them.
I have a question. I have a request, another request. Martha, how much, I don't know if you have this information, how much are we paying in other districts? For them, for students and or employees?
You know, I did provide that report, I'll have to look, about a year ago. So I'll look it up. I know that we're not the lowest, we're not the highest, we're kind of on the middle of the road.
So we shouldn't touch it, is that what
increase it, I don't recommend. Even our student per diem, and I'm going to say Socorro, I believe is somewhere in the $20 range or $23, $24 versus our $30.
And employees?
That I don't recall.
Because I know that the state pays $71 first if you travel within the state of Texas, no?
That's for lodging.
No.
Per diem?
Per diem.
I have to check. There's also, depending on the state you travel to.
Right.
You know, you have a different allocation.
We've been in the practice of maintaining the $45 a day. It is a struggle on the budgets. A lot of times, you know, having to call the campuses and saying, we need money, you know, to meet all your travel accommodations. And so I would say that that would probably put a bit of a strain on them, but if the consideration wants to be brought forward,
I think that's why it was requested last year on the per diems, and it never got addressed.
Yeah, I did provide it a brief discussion, but nothing.
I know, and that's why it's that time again, and if we need to address it, I don't know.
Do you want me to bring it forward next
committee? Can you give us an information? Well, next committee meeting, are we going to have the board, the budget approved already? How is that going to impact the budget?
Well, it's just at the point of actual travel, you know, they're just going to have to work around
out of the travel accounts.
It'll, you know.
Travel less? Travel less?
Maybe. Travel less?
No, you have to amend the budget, so.
Yeah, they'll have to, well, I won't give them a larger allocation because of travel.
Right.
What they'll have to do is kind of, you know, tweak their budgets to make it
a day less maybe.
I was going to say, maybe that could be a question we could put in the survey. Well, of course, they're going to want more money.
We're not
going to do
that. I don't know. What I'll do is I can provide...
Provide us that info.
I'll give you the comparison with other districts in the region.
Cabo, ya lo tienes. Just updated, ¿verdad? Ya lo tienes. You already have it? Just updated?
Yeah, it's already said. I just have to do some...
Okay. That's it. You just have to... I mean, add it to your list. Okay. Any more questions?
Ms. Martha, it's always nice to see your smiling face. You don't always get that.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. This is recommended to the board. Next agenda item.
Item G, extension of third-party administrative services agreement for cafeteria section 1.
Finally. They should have put you first, you see.
I don't miss you. Good evening, board members. I believe you have the information in front of you in regard to the current third-party administrative service agreement with TEB Benefits Group. Our current agreement is undergoing the second one-year period term. This will end or expire on August 31st of the current year. The agreement allows for one year extension or renewal term. And at this point, the administration is requesting from the board to recommend to the board that the agreement for the one-year renewal term will be allowed. This will start on September 1st of the current year and will expire on August 31st of the year 2014. If allowed, that will mean that the administration will undergo an RFP process early next year for this kind of service.
Okay.
Now, at this point, I can report that we have been in a good partnership with our current vendor. We have had no complaints. They have been more than willing to participate in different activities such as the last annual open enrollment. They did participate at every single assistance session that we have for the employees. So in terms of what they have provided to us, again, I can report that it's been more than a satisfying experience.
And that's correct. I just want to reiterate what Mario is saying. As far as customer service, they have provided that to the district. And so we're on the last leg of this contract agreement, which allows for one more year. And so that is why we're here to ask the committee to recommend to the board that we go ahead and fulfill that last year that we have available. And then, of course, next year start the RFP process.
Okay. No questions for recommendation to the full board.
Mr. Carmona, I would like to thank you for the customer service that you provide.
Thank you.
Excellent.
To our employees. I hear nothing but good things that you're always willing to help.
Thank you for that. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're recommending?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sometimes. Next agenda item.
Item H, 2013-14 compensation and needs assessment discussion. Ms. Carrasco.
No questions. Next agenda item? No, not really. Not really, Ms. Carrasco. Look at Marta Aguirre.
I would like to, and provided you in the packet, some information regarding our pay increase, general pay increase, that I would like to bring forth to the committee as a recommendation to the board, and that would be at a 2% pay increase. As you know, we signed on with TASB to do maintenance of our pay plan, and they will be here on the 21st for the full-blown presentation of the presentation. And but for now, I wanted to kind of give you a heads up as far as, and kind of get your input as far as what we're looking at for our pay increases. Now, I can tell you a couple of things here. I asked Ms. Aguirre how much money I had for pay increases and for extra needs assessment. And her response to me was $1.1 million is revenues over expenditures. So I took the liberty of using that $1.1 million to the fullest as best I can. And I don't know if there's any other expenditure that she's looking at. And I think she can go ahead and fill you in when she does her budget presentation. But if you look at the needs assessment summary that we talked about in the previous committee meeting, I went ahead and I highlighted in red the items that I can go ahead and given the 2% increase that we're looking at, the TASB figures show me that at 2%, the salary increases would be $715,032. So, you know, now I started doing the math, 1.1 minus the 750. So now I went to looking at the needs assessment summary at all the positions that have been requested. And so I went through and looked at some of the positions. If you look at the needs assessment summary, for example, at the high school, there's some teaching positions that we can fund. And everything that is in red is what I'm proposing be included in the budget. And the total there, like I said, for the high school, I've got a reading teacher, a history teacher, an English teacher, and an assistant principal. For the athletic program, I've got a coaching stipend, football coach, cross-country coach, softball coach, and baseball coach stipends. That's for a total of $19,200. And then I've got a record specialist for the HR office at $30,000. I've got a purchasing clerk for financial services at $30,000. And then we've got stipends. TASB has recommended that we increase our math and science stipends.
Martha, I'm going to interrupt you. What did you set the radar for?
What?
The red lettering is for?
The red letterings are the ones that I'm recommending that we go ahead and move forward with. And that total of all the red letterings is $392,625.
Okay.
So that plus the $715,000 for the 2% increase is the 1.1, and I'm going over a little bit. $1,107,657. So that's the total expenditures based on the revenues over expenses that Ms. Anita had that I want to use in that manner. That is my proposal. Of course, I know in hearing her speak, you know, we don't have too much leeway. And so, again, I'm not sure that, you know, there's any other expenditures that need to come up. She also has budgeted in the budget for 10 PEZ. So she has a separate allocation for $550,000. And so if there's any additional positions here in the needs assessment that we need to go ahead and fill, and then I also know that Ms. Searles had requested the position be discussed during this segment of the presentation on the government relations. What I do want to say is that for that position, for example, and I'm going to use that as an example, we went ahead and looked at that position and we're looking at it being an AP4. If that was the case, let's say you wanted that position to move forward, then that would have to be one of our PEZ positions. And so I guess what I'm requesting this evening is that for the committee to move forward with a recommendation to the board at a 2%.
I have a question. You mentioned items in red. So all the other ones that are in black?
I can't fund them based okay. on the money that was given. That, like I said, I took the liberty of taking the whole chunk.
And I,
you know, so based on what I'm adding here. Now, if you look in the depending on where the funding is, sources. For example, the positions that have CTE funding, those can move forward.
Right. And my question is this one, Martha, on the reading teacher, history, English, can those come out of PEZ, the PEZs?
Yes.
So why are you moving forward including in that red items and not charge them to the PEZs?
The reading teacher, the history teacher, remember that last year we had the issue where we would come and ask for positions?
Right.
Say, did you not plan for them at the beginning of the budget and include them in the budget from the get-go? So what we're doing now is bringing you all the positions that we're requesting that are needed.
Well, but I see it this way now. I mean, you're bringing us three positions on top of the 10 that you already have.
Well, on the 10 for the 550, that's separate.
Well, that's what I, that's I know I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But we're also remember at the high school we cannot predict exactly what we're doing with them because we're going from a 10 period day to an 8 period day. So we're going from teachers that are teaching 8 out of 10 to 6 out of 10. That's more teachers.
Right.
So
we already know that that's going to be needed anyway.
Okay. No, I agree. I agree.
That's the only reason why.
And the PEZ positions, those are for once the school year starts going, where, you know, it's anticipated that we are going to have some higher.
Right. I agree.
We're holding on to those 10 separately. If at the end of the day, you know, there's one position, for example, that government relations that, you know, it's a must-have and the board agrees to continue approve that position, then what I'm saying is that we'll have to pull it from the PEZ because the 1.1, again, I...
Right. Yeah, I understand. I understand. Any questions? Okay.
Yep. One of the things...
Mrs. Brigham.
One of the things I just wanted to make sure you knew is this is a 2%, and however, there are going to be other budget priorities that might be needed.
Right. That might be adjusted.
And see, what I'm saying is so.
But
say,
this looks good right now.
Mm-hmm. No, but I just want to make sure you know that, you know, when the people come in and say, we might need more money for field trips, or we might need something for this. You only have X amount of dollars that's coming in, and either that or we go into, right, you know. And we just came back from the bond rating, you know, if we looked at the fund balance, we have to be careful what we put in that fund balance and making sure. So we can't necessarily, like, I'm just off the top of the head, we just looked at all the police departments, we looked at, you know, we're looking at all that stuff. We're going to have to make some really hard decisions.
Right, and that's what I was telling Mike Gonzalez. I mean, we're here to grant wishes, but you can wish on, I mean, I didn't say this, but you can wish all you want, but.
No, you said it much nicer.
I was not ugly that day like I was too.
Well, I was listening to his presentation also, and yes, you know, we can bring our wish list, but at the end of the day, we've got to go with what can we afford this year and
right.
What we can and cannot do without.
Well, so it's those, a want and a need. Mm-hmm. And
we have to look at
I
that.
Mean, there's a lot of needs right now, but we cannot now, afford them all. So.
Now, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that with the 2% model, teacher starting pay currently is at $45,000. It would move up to $45,900, I think it is.
Yes, $45,900.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do we have any idea what neighboring school districts are doing?
We don't know.
Right now, I don't know exactly. They kind of keep that information close to their breast as far as, you know, what they're going to do. If you call and ask, you know, they say we have, which is the same thing I say right now, the board has not made a decision yet, so I don't really, you know, share exactly what it is, and they don't either.
But you don't tell them this is what we're recommending? You don't tell them?
Huh?
You don't tell them this is what we're recommending?
We just say, well, you know, we don't know yet. We're going to take some options to the board. And so the options right now that I'm bringing forth to the committee is at 2%. I do have, for example, if you all decide that, well, you know, given that, you know, and Ms. Aguirre makes her argument and says, okay, 1.1, Martha, back away. I do have a 1.5% increase, but I would like to push that 2%.
She's not here. Let's talk about her.
At a 1.5%, the salary increases, we're looking at $540,925. So it's
about how much, Mark, again?
$540,000.
But total?
Total. Uh-huh. $549.25, and that's at a 1.5%. And then the 2% is at $715,000.
No, but including that $345,000, how much would be the total?
Oh, with the needs.
The
total with the needs, it would be the $549.25 plus the
$392. It's just pocket change, Martha.
So
$932.
Yes, $932. So it's right at a million.
No. So really, how much?
$100,000.
Well, that was quick.
So,
Martha Aguirre, just give him a line item and.
So we're looking at that 2%, and then of course at the 1.5 teacher starting salary is $45,650. And so one of the things that I know that TASB right now. In the presentation that they will give you on the 21st, we're listed as the third district for teacher salaries.
Yeah?
Yes, we're paying.
Who's the first?
Clint.
And second?
Clint and Fabens, I believe, are the first two, and then
going
to the other.
And they're not going to go all the way over there.
And we're higher than Isleta and El Paso ISD.
Which are the main.
And we're close enough. Because the drive up there is a lot, so
it's
that's what I said. They're not going to go over there.
Uh-huh. So you know we're third. So with the major revamping that we did on salaries last year, it helped us as far as being in a competitive position. And so this whole thing here with the 2% is to remain at that competitive edge.
Okay.
A competitive edge includes administrative salaries.
Across the board.
Across the board.
What is
2% across the board.
What does it do if we don't give administration a
okay. We're getting off a little.
You knew I would do that. You knew I would do that. No, not really. Okay.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
We
love you all. We love you all. Okay, so do we need to take any action tonight?
Well, do we need to recommend to the board?
Recommend to the board.
Yes.
What do we recommend?
We'd like to recommend the 2%.
The needs assessment.
Can we, I will be presenting a budget update next Wednesday or next Tuesday, so maybe you can say recommend and then you guys can tweak or.
You're going to present us both figures?
Oh, I'm just going
to recommend to the full board the 2%.
She's going to present her budget.
Okay, recommend to the full board 2%.
We understand what you're saying.
See?
Item I, possible adoption of localized policy.
Thank you, Martha Carrasco and Martha Aguirre.
And Martha Carrasco still has a statement.
What was the okay, so what the other item that we have on there is the policy manual from TASB, and if you look over to your left, that is the manual that we've been provided
with an iPad included. With an iPad included?
No iPad was included.
Did you budget it for that, Marta Aguirre, for next year? And did you budget it for that? You were supposed to. Yes.
For iPads?
Well, whatever we're going to get.
Tablets.
Well, okay, tablets will do. Don't give us a chart or something, a writing tablet, okay?
You want it with posting?
Stop. Okay, let me remove that agenda item that we just approved, and to remove administrative. Martha Aguirre? Okay, okay, Martha.
So basically, if you remember, a couple of years ago, we had back in March of 2012, last year, we had the policy review session, and we had a representative from TASB come in and go over the policies, and then Ms. Searles and I sat down and reviewed policies
all day,
shipped them out, and so finally they got it all done, and we got a new manual. So now what it entails is that we do away with the old and then with the new. And so basically what they're saying is that I needed to bring the new book to the board, and then the board needs to repeal all previously adopted policies and adoption of local policies, and adopt the local policies as prepared by TASB. So it's kind of be a brand new book.
I know, but that's as effective when, because we have been making revisions, no?
Well, the update 96 probably won't be in there. This is current up to update 96.
Okay.
Right. It's not the new 97.
So anything new that we start sending them, of course, will be added to the book. But this is kind of giving us a clean start, where now it's like, okay, you've got the new book, now move forward and maintain the policy.
Okay.
Is that also, I recommend that you get a new book from Ms. Searles.
That is her book.
Oh, that's her book.
Yes, I have another one in the office.
She got two.
That would be her book.
Cool.
And I believe it was a total of about $600 for the two books.
That's exactly.
It's how much a tablet cost.
A tablet costs $300. You're right.
Okay, you see, we're even cheaper than that. Okay, we agree. Then we concur to recommend it to the full board.
Yes.
Thank you. Next agenda item. Adjournment.
Yes.
Community input. No community input. Once, twice.
Yeah.
Item four, adjournment.
Adjournment. It's 9:37. Yay.
Yay. Good job.
Thank you, Richard.